quiet, numbskulls. I'm broadcasting.
Hello, you're listening to the podcast, so there I was. It's how all great aviation tales begin. This is episode 104, coming down like a gun safe with a lot of guns.
That was a great description, because when he told the story, I was like, okay, I got it, you know, right? Right? A gun safe with a lot of guns coming right out of the sky.
Yeah, man. That's faster than a dock and a bonanza.
But coming out of the sky faster than a dock and a bonanza. Disco, what a great interview. Very animated. You know, he's a great storyteller. He's, you know, he was one of the guys that flew in the first Gulf War in the Harrier. And, you know, Repeat and I sat and watched the whole damn thing on CNN at VMA 223. So when they came back and they were telling their stories, you know, we looked at these guys like they were, you know, legends. Because they had war stories, and we didn't have any war stories.
Yep. He did some cool stuff, and he right? He did some really cool stuff and wound up getting featured in People magazine over it. That was one of it. But
yeah,
you said something here, and I want to reemphasize that. You listen to this show, you are going to howl. Two things about that. One, we get a Christmas card from him every year, and my wife gets angry if she doesn't get it. She's never met him, but howls when she reads his Christmas card every year. And he's just as funny on this show as he is in his Christmas letter.
He could do stand-up. I mean, so, he really could do stand-up.
Yep.
He's that absolutely funny of a guy.
Absolutely. And one of our listeners decided, you know what? It's late. I'm tired. Company just left. I'm going to bed. But I'm going to watch the video stream on YouTube for 5 minutes before I go to bed. And 2 hours later, turned it off. That's how good this is.
Yeah. So, you know, he goes, you know, it went fast, like it always does, right?
Yeah.
Next thing we know, we've been talking for damn near 2 hours. And we're like, holy shit, Disco.
Yeah.
We got to let you go, bro, because, I mean, you know, we could keep going.
But we didn't let him go completely. Remember, now, if you're a Patreon supporter or you go to sotherewas.us/donate, and donate directly, then we give you the links to the private video for the extra show. And we spent another 28 minutes talking to him after the show with two more stories.
He had two more great stories.
Oh yeah. One where he almost ejected, and one where he was dropping rock eye in Iraq and looking up at the ground doing it.
So. Yeah, that was another. You know, I was there when he told the story. I was totally there. He put you right there.
Yeah. He imitates everybody. He's got great voices and all that stuff. He's talking about the Iraqi soldier sitting on the tank having tea with all the time compression. It's like, oh my God. So,
and some of the pranks that he pulled throughout his career are epic. I mean,
absolutely
epic. Not epic. Flying pranks. I'm talking about pranks in the off-duty type status. Pranks on his skipper, pranks on, I mean, you know, nobody was off limits to this guy.
Brilliant stuff. Yeah. He was fearless in the shit that he pulled.
Yeah.
So it was awesome.
Before
we get out of the way, let's cover a couple other quick admin things. We got some new ratings this week, some new 5-star ratings. I'm going to read one here real quick. Repeat Fig and their outstanding guests present their past experiences in an exceedingly compelling way for all the listeners. Their stories of past adventures will have you laughing on the edge of your seat, hopefully not on the ejection handle. Share the sorrow of many who paid the ultimate sacrifice. And I highly recommend following them on Rumble to watch the video broadcast and see the added nuances and get so much more out of it than you would otherwise. So thank you for all your service. Episode number 54, Major Brian Punchy Shule, retired, hit home for many of us. It was his last interview, and less than 2 weeks later, he passed away. Ladies and gentlemen, many of those interviewed have said they just wanted their stories documented. This podcast is one for me that makes me proud to listen to for everyone's heroic careers. Repeat and Fig, thank you for all you do and to bring these historic interviews, not to mention your own careers, you are both ever so humble about. Stay safe and check six.
That's truly humbling to hear that review. I mean, it really is, right?
Absolutely. And a couple more. So if you want to give us a 5-star review, go to sotherewas.us/rate, and we would really appreciate that. Those help push us up and get other people listening to us.
We just keep getting bigger, and you know, hey, share the show because it doesn't cost anything. Tell your friends. Tell your friends to listen. It's fun.
Yeah.
Right? Mowing the lawn, driving down the road.
We have three people who have stepped up in the last 60 hours to support us financially. We got Jerry Mullen, who gave us a $25 donation, as did Phil Marie. And I hope I'm spelling or saying your last name right, Phil. Another $25 one-time donation at SotheroWoes.us/donate. We're deeply grateful. And then Matt Geyer stepped up at SotheroWoes.us/Patreon and became a division lead by donating $15 a month, pledging $15 a month to us. So thank you. That money will go directly to help putting this show together and bring more great aviators like Disco to you.
I got a call sign for Matt.
Oh, do it, man.
Matt Fall Geyer.
Okay.
Call sign Fall.
Fall Geyer.
Fall Geyer. Nice. Yeah. Thank you, Matt. Yeah. And thank you, Phil, and thank you, Jerry. Very humbling. Thank you all, gentlemen.
Indeed. We're deeply grateful for that. We have over 800 members now on our Facebook group, SotheroWoes.us. So it's facebook.com/SotheroWoes.us. Follow our Facebook group, and we also have the Facebook page. Follow that as well and get all the content, get the announcements when the shows are going to be recorded, that sort of thing.
Hey, and this is a good opportunity to say thank you to Bago for managing our Facebook account.
Right.
He does it behind the scenes, and he's awesome. Thanks, Bago.
He does indeed. And thank you to Styx for doing in-show production. Not this week with Disco, but last week we had a story. We did the extra story with Lobo, and it was about the call sign Simba. And as he told what happened, damn if Styx didn't have the screenshot from The Lion King up there, and I almost fell out of my chair laughing. It was brilliant. So
I know, right? It couldn't have been better timed.
No, it could not have. It was great for you. For those of you on Patreon, you've got the link, and we're happy to share that with you. Thank you so much for all you share with us. I don't know, Fig. I think we should get out of the way and listen to Disco because I need another workout, another core workout. Right?
This here is a true story.
Let's get out of the way. Don't sit on the ejection seat handle.
Don't do it.
It'll leave a mark.
Cockpit, on the tanker, through the weather. Oh, and to the tanker crew who did that. Thanks a lot. We really appreciated that. I'm just kidding. No, I'm not. Well, there I was, crossing the pond, and you could see that I wasn't exactly
so
fun.
There I was. There was a gentleman that is in one of these pictures here. He was going through the IET syllabus at VMAT 203. You're laughing already, aren't you? At Cherry Point, I think it was like maybe three classes or something like that, and I don't three flights or something. And I think I had him on his first flight. So we sit down, we brief, and if you know me, that's great. If you don't know me, that's too bad because everything to me is funny, and I'm kind of a clown, and I like to have fun. I'm always looking for a way to make things fun for me. I don't care if it's fun for you.
I don't.
So anyway, we get out into the jets. I think we have two single seaters, and we get on runway 32. And we do what's called a stream stow, so we're 1,000-foot separation on the runway. And the typical thing would be to say, you know, your call sign, Disco's rolling, go. Boom, and away we go. Well, I'm playing a student, and I'm here to have fun. And I don't really care if the other guy does or not. So I just go with the power, and I think the first clue that the guy was with realized that, uh-oh, things are going to go interesting here, was you kind of see the smoke and the exhaust blowing, and I'm just gone. Because that airplane accelerated like crazy. So I'm gone. I'm airborne. I'm gone. And I head south. We're going somewhere down south toward Myrtle Beach. I think we were doing a low level. So it was maybe the 1074 or something like down there by Cape Fear. And I get up to Al. I think my level off at 12. They said, you know, climb 218, blah, 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 turn here. And so I get up there 12 and I'm just like all the way to idle. And I get that thing. I think it was 15 units, but it's been 1,000 years. But really right on the edge of stall. So you're just hanging on the blades and barely airborne. I think it was 15 units. And I got that baby just dancing right there. And I'm just, so it's flying like this, you know, coming through the air. Next thing I see, there goes
Repeat. No awake.
At least 200 knots of closure. Speed breakout. Just gone. Trying to join up on me.
Breaking stop.
I remember him just going.
Okay. Just goes, and I know there's more. I know there's more to this.
Oh, yeah. And he just goes, that was beautiful. That's all he said is he just blows by.
He says, that was beautiful.
Yeah, he goes, that was beautiful. And I'm in my jet. I am laughing my ass off because the beginning and the middle, I mean, already I was like, this is just going to be a blast. The rest of the way, it's just great, man. This was awesome. I already screwed him over twice. I'm having a good time, and we'll just see how the rest of this plays out. But yeah, that's a good start. I remember that, man.
Oh, man, that is outstanding. Hey. Greetings, everybody. Repeat here, coming to you from New Hampshire today. My cohort Fig is somewhere on the East Coast. Where are you, Fig?
I am in Hilton Head, South Carolina, broadcasting from my aluminum tube.
Nice.
And I'm traveling in right now.
Nice. And so, well, on the video, your audio may
be... Our guest...
So there's a big lag here because he's recording on his phone. So that may happen a little bit. But, yeah, go ahead and finish introducing Disco here, if you would.
I was just going to say it's my distinct pleasure to introduce our guest today, Harrier pilot, legend extraordinaire, part-time comedian, full-time, excellent airline pilot, our friend Disco. Welcome, Disco.
Flexing the guns. Welcome, Disco.
Guns.
That was outstanding.
Yeah. Well, I'll segue because I'm thinking about that too with flexing the guns. I mean, I got to tell you guys. I mean, I already got another story.
Oh, absolutely! So, it's what this is about.
I know. And so this one was. You got neither one of you two. Were you in 223? Or which gun squad?
Yeah, he was 223 with me.
He was 223 with you, that's what I thought. Yeah,
223.
So neither one of you two poor, miserable wretches got to go to the Westpac. You ever did a Westpac tour? It's a 6-month UDP?
We did in 92.
We did in 92 with the PI was closed to us, so we didn't do that.
Okay. Yeah, the PI, that's because, I mean,
there was a volcano or some shit.
Yeah, Mount Pinatubo. Remember that thing blowing its top over there? It was, so when I was in the infantry for a year, I used to have all these ex-Vietnam, our staff NCOs were all ex-Vietnam vets. And I mean, so the stories and stuff, so they're sitting there telling me as a young second lieutenant, because I got to be good friends with a lot of staff NCOs, because a smart lieutenant does that. And they'd be telling me about stuff in the Philippines. I'm like, you guys are so full of shit. When we went over there, they weren't full of shit, man. Everything they said they did over there, the little monkey shows and the banana across the room and the hot dog and the picking up the all that stuff, they do that. It's true. It's unseemly. Oh God, it's just a horrible thing to witness. So anyway, we're over there and we're doing Coke Thunder, which is like Red Flag, which is like, you know, it's one of the big exercises with the, you know, the tack, you know, the big theater room, and you kind of debrief everything afterward and all the people, you know, moving pieces and parts. You get enough, I mean, 15 airplane dogfights with F-16s, F-15s, Hornets, and Harriers, and then ingressing into targets, dropping. It was crazy. It was nuts. So we're over there having a good old time, and there's a picture of Sal, Dave Salafe, standing on the top of his jet, you know, flexing like this. And it's, you know, it says, it was great. It was our cruise book. It says, master of the, you know, 9G monster break. And then the next picture's of him in his utilities serving coffee as the ODO for the next 2 weeks. He got grounded because he overstressed the jet. But it was just jungle rules over there in the Philippines. Ah, the flying was amazing and the stuff we got to do. It was just like it was a clown show.
I had a bootleg copy of your, somebody made a squadron video of your Westpac on a VHS tape. I got a bootleg copy of it. It's awesome to watch. It's, you know, it's set to all kinds of music, you know, a lot of Bon Jovi. And there's, you know, you guys are at the club and, you know, some other guys are coming by the club, you know, in the break and doing just
actually,
you know, silly
actually
shit.
That was, most of that was actually, I was the one that edited. Most of it was filmed with my video camera that I bought in when I was over in Westpac. So I think somewhere I've got the original raw footage, and I edited it down, and it kind of got spread around to everybody there. And then Turbo did some Gulf War stuff, but he blended in our Westpac. He has Westpac tapes that I guess he posted on Farcebook. Yeah. And when I'm looking at those, I'm going, I remember that footage. I took that. Or in my camera, I'd hand it to somebody. Like when we were landing in Pohang, I can't think of that. Was that Team Spirit, I think, maybe, with the Koreans? And, you know, we'd run into all these Russian planes. Yeah. You know, they're flying around out there, you join up on, or they join up on us, or we join up on them. And it was crazy. You know, it was all that Cold War crap. We're landing on
the Cold War was still going on.
Yeah, these pads. We're landing on these pads in the middle of this, you know, the shoreline deserty area. And Rosie's got my camcorder. So he's walking around filming people landing and taking off vertically. And that got kind of blended in. And so either I took video or my camera got passed around like a teenage girl. And everybody was using it. So it's kind of a prostitution.
All right. Hey, I want to back way up for a second. Right. Way up.
Okay.
You kind of glossed over this. And I know this story, but so you spent a year as an infantry officer, but before that, commissioning source, you were a PLC, platoon leaders corps guy for commissioning
Yeah, in
source,
fact, we just found out a few minutes ago, we had the same evil man from hell as a platoon sergeant. Yeah.
Mr. Gladstone.
Staff Sergeant Gladstone, wherever you are, you owe us an apology.
I mean, that guy, he smoked at least a half a pack of cigarettes a day. He could outrun all of us.
Yep.
You never sweat, you know, or he changed his clothes so quick, you would never see, like, you never saw a drop of sweat on this guy. I mean, he was inhuman, otherworldly.
4% body fat.
Yeah, and he was evil beyond belief. I mean, that guy...
Were you guys PLC or OCS?
No, I was OCS.
PLCs.
Yes.
Oh, you did OCS.
I was OCS. Okay. Yeah. So I actually had, I'm gonna give you the quick and dirty one. So I wanted to go to the Air Force Academy when I was a kid. Please. I want to be in the Air Force, you know. And I was an alternate, and they said, okay, you can go to the prep school. And I'm a high school kid. You know, you can go to the prep school for a year, then you go to the academy.
I don't want to do that. I want to do what I want to do.
So... in the meantime, I'd also gotten and applied for an Air Force ROTC scholarship, 4-year. I got that, and I was going to go to Colorado State. I got accepted to a couple of different schools, but I decided Colorado State. The depth of my thinking was, well, there's mountains there, dude, so there's got to be snow, and you can ski. Let's go there. So that was my choice, and then 2 weeks before I was supposed to go, I bagged that, and the Air Force was pissed. So I ended up going to Cal Poly San Luis Obispo. Toward the end of my education time there, have a rethinking of what I wanted to do, and go into the Air Force office, they'd look at me. This is Reagan years, so it's hard to get in the military because everybody wanted to do it. You know, everyone to fly jets. So I walk in there and they pull up my social and they went, you turned us down. I go, yeah. And they go, get the f*** out of here. And I went, really? And they go, yes, out. So I went, they just threw me out. So I went into the talk to the Navy, and the Navy processed me through, and the guy says, hey, you're my number one candidate, but you're not Black, Hispanic, or a woman. This is 84. He goes, I can't even process you for surface warfare. And I went, what? He goes, I can't. He says, we got quotas right now. We're trying to fill all these quotas. I'm sorry, but that's just the way it is.
Wow.
And then I everybody gets discriminated against sometime in their life. It's just life. It's the way it is. Sucks, but it's life. So the Marine guy, his name's Doug Hamlin. He's actually I think he's the executive director for the NRA now. Smart guy from Grosse Pointe, Michigan. He was the officer's selection officer. And he's the one that grabbed me and he goes, hey, I'd like to look at you and run you through the process. So I got an aviation slot for the 5 Western states. I think there were like 2 slots. So that's kind of how it started. So I ended up I graduated from college, and the next day I was in, and actually Hoot Gibson, the astronaut who was from, he was a Navy pilot. Yeah. Navy. Hoot Gibson had gone to Cal Poly also. So he spoke at my graduation. And the next day I was in Quantico, Virginia at Washington National Airport. You know, getting picked up by enlisted Marines for OCS for the next, I think it was 16 weeks.
Oh, nice.
And I'm just going, and you have no idea what you're getting into. And, you know, when you get there, you're just, it's, I don't know how the Marine Corps is now, But back then, man, back in the old core when we were I mean, man, back then it was just I mean, they would actually when you at Port Arms, they would when they got mad at you, they'd hit your rifle so that the front sight post it hit you in the forehead and just leave a huge divot, and you'd have blood dripping all down your face and everything. So they didn't hit you, but they hit your rifle. That was cool. And you know Gladstone, yeah. Man. It was brutal. And I got invited to smoke and joke and hang around when I got
He was a beast.
Cut. So yeah, I got my hair cut. I'm walking out. I don't know if you guys remember when you get your hair cut at OCS anyway, at Quantico. It was at Brownfield. So I'm there at Brownfield. I get my hair cut. I walk out and there's this, you know, they got those four black guys. And you can't understand a word they're saying. They got your head like a bowling ball. And they're going, talking to each other. And I walk out. And I had long hair. And all of a sudden, it's gone. I'm walking out. There's this, you know, like four full-length mirrors. I look at myself. I start busting up. So I'm like, I walk out the door. And this Sergeant Lynch, he's, you know, like about this. He's about this tall, but he's about this wide. He probably was a college wrestler. The guy was just solid muscle. And he jacks me up. And he's like, Biglin. And he's banging his lapel of his hat on my forehead. Going, ding, ding. And he's like, you think this is funny? And I'm like, you know, I'm just kind of doing the tap dance verbally around. And he says, you're going to come to my hatch tonight. You're going to smoke and joke and hang around with me. Which meant I go there, you know, bang, bang, bang on the bulkhead. And he lets me in. And there's a pull-up bar in his office. And he goes, get up on that thing. I'm like, what? He goes, what do you mean what? Get up on it. So I'm hanging from this thing. And he's smoking cigarettes and telling me jokes while I'm hanging on this pull-up bar. Well, you know how long you can hang up on a pull-up bar. You know, minute and a half. I'll say, down you go, get back up there. We did this nonsense for 15, 20 minutes, you know, until I was just jelly. And he goes, get the fuck out of here. So, you know, I know it's funny. It's I told you everything was funny to me.
It's funnier when it's happening to somebody else.
Oh, yeah. But I learned really quick. And, man, OCS, man, right. I was a little slow on the uptake, but it took me about a week. I went, you need to shut up and not laugh.
Yeah.
So, anyway. So sounds like he's with his boyfriend right now.
Yeah, exactly. Fig, you have completely broken up. He said, I think he said something about giving a whole new meaning to smoking and joking and hanging around.
Yeah, it actually did the same thing for me because I didn't really know what it meant. And after that, I was like, I don't want to do that again. I don't want to smoke and joke and hang around with anybody. That was horrible.
That may be a show title there, smoking, joking, and hanging around. God. All three at the same time.
Hysterical. It's hysterical now when you think of it. Really funny. But yeah, so after after that, my class ended up getting royally screwed. I mean, I had a really great experience in the Marine Corps, I feel incredibly blessed to have had the opportunity to do it. But you know, it's a government that you get lied to and you get deceived and all that stuff. So I ended up in the infantry. You know, not really. I had a choice to do that. And I
did you have an air contract?
I did in half my class. It's a long story. The Marine Corps lied to us. There was a lot of players involved.
I was in that same thing. It was 84 where they sent a bunch of us to the fleet.
Yep.
And everything that sucked.
I don't know if you were in the theater when General Maloney came and spoke to all of us and told us how
yes.
Okay, yeah. So General Maloney. Yeah, and the thing where it blew up and the Navy showed up was one of the guys in my class had been a Wall Street trader, and he had some very, very wealthy connected clients.
Ooh, okay.
So when he wrote a letter to his congressman and some of his buddies, that's when things blew up in the Marine Corps face. So that's where all those guys, so half my class just disappeared, went to the Navy and the Marine
Corps. Went Navy, yeah.
Pissed. And I was this far. I was actually walking down the hallway to put in, I'm going to the Navy. And there's the R. We had one, Tom Kiley, he was a Cobra pilot. He sees me walking by, man. I walk by, and he grabs my arm and drags me in his office and just starts chewing my ass. And I had some mixed emotions because I actually knew that one of my options was to go in the infantry for my stash time. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to go, after being at TBS, I was like, God, I like to think a lot of things about the infantry. And I almost went to Ranger School in 29 Palms. They were dangling that in front of me to keep me from going to flight school. I wanted to do it. I'm like, I'm going to flight school. But so I ended up staying in the Marine Corps at that point, and half my class left. I was, you know, I had mixed emotions the rest of TBS, but in the end of the day, I'm glad I stayed, and I really enjoyed flying aviators. It was an amazing experience, and you know, like I said, I work with some unbelievable people, you know, just great people in that community. We had our shitbirds, but overall, awesome time. Awesome time. Enjoyed it. But the infantry was a good experience. I learned a lot. Like I said, my staff NCOs, this is a great story too. So we had this one, he was a gunnery sergeant. His name was Gunny Barry. And he had this like nasty porn stash. And I think he'd been busted a million times when he was in Vietnam. He should have been like a master gunnery sergeant. And he's one of those guys when he hated lieutenants, hated them. A lot of those staff NCOs did. So when you first show up there, you're at Butter Bar, you're like, hey, how you doing? Hi, guys. He looked at all of us. And I'm always, you know, I'm smiling all the time, so I'm having a good time. So that was bad, too. Lieutenant that's smiling, that's not a good thing. So I walked up to him one day, and I said something to him, and he goes, okay, lieutenant. And I just kind of looked at him. I kind of looked at him and smiled. And then he goes, hey, make sure that lieutenant is billed for his MRE. And I'm like, whatever. So I'm about a week later, I wanted to ask him a question. I walk up to him. It's the same thing, you know, it's like five words, lieutenant. And I start cracking up. And he looks at me, and he doesn't really know what to think because, you know, he's being disrespectful, barely.
Yeah.
He's right on the edge, and he knows it. But I'm not mad. I'm not getting you indignant or pissed off or anything. And I said, you know, Gunny, I got to tell you, man, I've never seen anybody say lieutenant so closely to the edge of contempt, but just barely walking the edge of respect. That was a work of art. It was amazing. And he looks at me, and I start laughing, and he starts laughing. After that, it was Lieutenant Begelin. We were, we were great friends after that. But yes. You know, just. So you had to learn how to work these guys because they were so crusty.
Well, he was waiting for you to jump his shit.
Yeah, he was waiting for me so he could just basically just be, you know, just, you know, borderline and disrespectful. But I just was like, it was so funny to me. I just like, I actually like this guy because he's good at what he's doing and he knows how to do it and he knows how to get away with it. So I respect that, you know. And we were great friends after that. So anyway, then I went to flight school and we went through that whole process. So. There's all million stories through that too. Because I got a buddy and he met a girl and he got pregnant. So I took his day to class. And when I went through flight school, I was there in a helo push and I couldn't believe it. It just was, you know, it's like a clown show. The day you show up in the Marine Corps to the day you get out, it's a clown show and it's a flip of the coin all the time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That is.
You just never know how it's going to, you never know how
can it's you, end. Hey, can you define helo push? I mean, we know what it means, but for our non-aviation.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. So, yeah, in the Marine, because the Marine Corps is smaller, and Marine Corps, I mean, typically when we went through, you guys probably about the same time I did, it's about one out of 12 guys would get a fixed wing slot. So it's really competitive to get a jet slot. And I always tell people, if you want to be a jet pilot, go to the Navy, don't go to the Marine Corps, because you're going to probably fly helicopters or MB-22s. You may see a C-130 every once in a while, but you're probably going to be in the rotary community. So the helo push. And when I showed up in flight school, so I showed up a class earlier than I was supposed to. And back then there was a muster we'd go to, and guys were showing up in jams and sandals to go to the beach.
Oh, we're, yeah.
Okay, enough
on
of
the
that.
Main side.
Yeah, yeah, on the main side. Yeah, everybody's at Charlie's. And I get there, and the pool's about 60 days. So I've been there a week. And then one day, the guy that musters all goes, hey, so-and-so, Joe Shit the Ragman Banatz decided he doesn't want to be a pilot when he grows up. And we have a slot starting Monday. I think it was Friday. Does anybody want it? You know, and I'm like, I'll take it. You know, these guys are all going to the beach. You know, they've been doing the beach for 30 days. I've been there for a week. And they say, hey, does anyone want to start flying? I went, that's kind of an IQ test. Yes, I'm here.
Yeah, well, why, isn't that why we're here?
Absolutely.
Yeah, and so I started actually right. Pretty quick. And then when I got to my selection process, I was in VT6, so they adjust the scores based on the squadron. And VT6 was supposed to be a Santa Claus squadron, but that wasn't necessarily the case. It depended on who your instructors were. So I had good grades. I had good academics. I had good flight scores. I had all that stuff. But I still thinking, man, when they adjust my scores, man, because it looked like, hey, you're number one right now. After they adjust my scores, I don't know. But I was on the Commodore's list. I'm thinking, and everybody's getting helicopters anyway. They said everybody's gonna get helicopters, so you know, just you get to choose what you want to do when you get done with that. I'm fine. And I was like, well, you know, I signed up for the Marine Corps, I stayed in the Marine Corps. Hey, this is the way it goes, you know, quit your bitching, shut up and fly, you know, kind of a thing. And I show up the next day, And I get orders for J3, which is Beeville. I'm sitting there with my chin hanging on the ground going, what the heck? That's VT6? That's what they look like now?
Yeah. Yeah, it doesn't look like Food World patch, right? Back in the day? Food World.
It was like a globe. And then the other two guys called the Lambert Conformals, which is a type of map. You know, instead of the Dodo Birds or the Black Knights or the Red Knights, and we were
there was a grocery store chain down there at the time, and it was called Food World, and it looked like that.
Yeah, it just
was I was a VT6 kind of when it looked like that. Yeah,
actually, I have it on the base of one of those. I got a T34. I can actually show it to you. It's a T34 with the patch. I'm not the patch, but it carved in the base. The base of the, you know, one of those ones carved in the Philippines, out of mahogany.
Oh, right. Yeah, the squadron logo carved into the wooden base of the
stand. The squadron logo. I mean, those guys were amazing. They go, I want this, I want that. And you'd come back and it's perfect. It was amazing what they did.
No problem. 2 days.
Please. I got to tell you that story. You guys will love this. So they put me in charge of, I was in logistics. So that I got a way to punish me before. Smoke and the XO left the squadron. They stuck me in logistics and made me the RO just to, you know, kind of thing. And so I get sent over to Japan for Westpac. The good part was I was the OIC for the advanced party to go to the Philippines. And, putting me in charge of a bunch of idiots, it was a bad move. So we're there for 2 weeks before everybody else shows up.
Right.
It was nothing but fun. I mean, all the enlisted guys and us, we had a blast. And I had the double AMO, Scott Findell, big guy had glasses like this, and they were this thick, former cop. And if you go to the Philippines or to Japan and you get the squadron patch or emblem painted on a piece of metal to put out in front of your squadron, took 5 months and a week. So you put it in
order. You're only there for 6 months.
Exactly. Right. So you get there the first day and you're going, I talk to him about this. They go, oh yeah, you put in what we will get to you. It will be here in June of 75. And I'm going, man, I go, we're leaving the next week. Like, well, that's the way it goes. So I just went, a typical Marine. I'm like, eh, fuck that shit. So I go and I go to the metal shop. I get the two squadron patches, this big around with the ribbon at the base, cut out of metal, sheet metal. And then I go to, I can't remember where it was. I think it was the Motor T place. And I go, you guys got, yellow paint, black paint, red paint, green paint, the paint's in our patch. I get these in these big cans. I stuff them in a C bag. I go talk to Scotty Findell. And I went, well, I'm the OIC. We're going to write ourselves TAD orders. We're going to the Philippines. So we get in the Air Force. I just decided to do this. We get in an Air Force C-141. And I got this big round thing wrapped in craft wrapper taped, which was the metal sheets, and all this paint. And do you guys have any hazardous materials to declare? Clank, bang, ding, bong. Nope. Ding, bang, bang. So these two jarheads get on there. We go down there. I find a guy, 4 days, bam, gorgeous. Absolutely gorgeous. So when our squadron got there, they were all set up. But the funny thing was, so we go down there, and that's my first experience in the Philippines. And I'm just, my jaw's on the ground. I'm just like, what? It is a freaking circus. It's a circus. And we end up going. We end up going
an adult circus, I might add.
Yeah.
An adult circus.
Yeah.
I love you long time, no shit.
Dick. As long as you had dick, it was Dickie Land. It's just crazy. So anyway, we go, and I'm not going to say the name, but we go to kind of an off strip. We're down there in a tuck or whatever those things are, a jeepney. Going down there, little tuck-tuck things, there were little three-wheel doodads.
Yeah.
Scott and I are in the back like this, riding.
It's a powered tricycle with the two dudes in the back and the driver riding it, on the steering
wheel. Tuck-tucks.
Filipinos are this wide, and we're here, and we're like, halfway hanging out. So we go to this bar, and we walk in there, and we sit down and get a Samagoo, and there's like 25 cents. And Scott gets one, and I'm like, and right over there is a squadron commander. I won't say any names or what squadron, anything like that. And he's got three little Filipino girls climbing all over him. And I look at him, I'm like this. And he looks
recognize him?
Yeah, And he recognized. I got Vapor's expression. One of those?
Uh-huh.
And I look over there, I'm like, shit. And all of a sudden he looks at me and his eyes are like, they get boing. His mouth hangs open. I'm like, and I'm like, you know, like this. I'm talking to Scott. I'm like, finish our breakfast. We need to get out of here. So the next day, or actually it was, we get our metal things, plates. We go back to church. Yeah, those things. Well, yeah, the little guys right there. Those things.
The tuk-tuks. Yeah. Yeah.
So we go back to the, to Iwakuni, and I get back there, and all of a sudden somebody goes, hey, Skipper wants to see you. I'm like, okay.
I bet he does.
I wonder why.
This is the outgoing squadron.
I'm not going to say which squadron.
Yeah. I bet he does.
I bet he does.
Yeah. Anyway, you know, I'd say, you know, so I walk in there and it's like, hey, can I get you a cup of coffee? I'm like, hey, this is starting out pretty good. I like a little cream, a little sugar back when before I drank it black.
Two lumps.
Yeah. Back before I drank it. Yeah. Two lumps.
Yeah. Before I drank and have it served by a Filipino, would you?
So we're sitting there, you know, jaw jack, and I got my feet up on his coffee table. I'm in my utilities, So we're going back and forth and stuff, and he finally goes, so, hey, about the other night, I'm like, sir, I don't know what you're talking about. And he goes, that's good. great conversation. You have a great day. I'm like, all right, sir. Out I go. But us going to the Philippines, when we went there, me and Scotty, what a freaking boondoggle. And we get back. Squadron shows up. I got everybody's room set up. I got their little gi-dun kit. Everybody gets I got the two beers waiting for them. I mean, everything was just seamless for the squadron when they showed up.
Yeah, you had the shit laid out, right?
Yeah, I had it laid out. Everything was seamless.
Yeah, so it's a boondoggle, but you're doing your work, man.
Oh, yeah. We did a lot of work. I mean, the troops were all set up when they got there, everything.
I got several questions that I got saved up here. First of all, I'm going to ask you some questions. So you were advanced party. Oh, I see, the advanced party.
Yeah.
Right? Can you just in a briefly discuss, you know, what's that about? The advanced party, you know, for our non anointed.
Okay. And then remind me to tell you my toilet paper story. That's even better.
Okay. I'll write that down. And I got more questions as soon as you answer this.
Shit paper. So.
Well, and so anyway, say what an OIC party, is even while you're at it.
So when an advanced party typically would happen is if a squadron's doing a unit deployment, or if they're going on a boat, or if they're going in a unit deployment program. So the unit goes as a unit over to Japan for 6 months. That's a UDP, WestPAC or Western Pacific. So we did that. And typically what they'll do is they'll send an advanced party of 15 Marines, enlisted and officers, to liaise with the departing squadron to do a transition of a plant and equipment, meaning all the Marine Corps property, which I had to sign for, and, you know, turning over the spaces and turning over anything operationally, any passed down logs of how to do things, which I used to get so mad when I walk into a shop and the departing guy would go, hey, good luck. I'm going, you got a passed down log? Nope. So anytime I went anywhere, I'd make a passed down log for the next guy, because that used to just frost my wiener bag. It used to piss me off. And you don't want frost on your wiener bag because it makes it look really
makes it uncomfortable.
It makes your vanilla scented sack look incredibly tiny, and you won't impress anybody with that thing. So anyway, so the advanced party went over there, and we were just kind of setting everything up so when the squadron shows up, the bulk or the vast majority of the squadron, everything's kind of a seamless transition for them into their spaces, into their workspaces, into their lodging and BOQs or enlisted quarters or staff NCOs and all that. And then into their workspaces, like maintenance walks in, everything's all set up. They got typewriters, they got file cabinets.
It's a job that you can only screw up, right? If everything goes great and everybody shows up, that's the way it's supposed to be. But if you screw one thing up, you're going to hear about it, right?
Well, I see people get Navy Achievement Medals for doing stuff, you know, just getting it seamless like that. But, man, you screw, you know, and I've seen people get nothing for doing a great job. But, man, you screw it up, you're going to hear for it for the rest of your career.
That's right. Yeah. It's a no-win situation.
No.
If you do everything right,
And I got to do it on the way, on the other end, going back to church. Oh,
nice.
And then I had somebody try and throw me under the bus, and I was going to shoot him when he got back. But he's lucky I didn't. Yeah, he calls me at 2 in the morning, and he's like, you're going to go to jail. I'm like, if I find you, I'll kill you first. For calling me is one thing. But anyway, that was that. So the toilet paper story.
Wait. So pool, you were talking about when you went to Pensacola. You were there was a pool. Yes, there's lots of pools, but that's not the pool you're talking about. Can you define that for our
knowledge? Oh yeah. So a pool is just a that's just a bag of guys or girls, guys, girls, whatever. So there's a pool.
Waiting to start.
It's like you're all sitting in a waiting pool with the water right up to your belly button, waiting for the first person who's going to get called out. That's what it is.
So it's above your wiener bag is what you're saying.
You got a damp wiener bag. And hopefully it's warm. You got 60 people sitting there looking at each other going, hey, what do you think?
It's a delay. It's a delay in start.
It's a delay. Right? Yeah.
And it's a group of people that are all delayed together. They call it a pool. Okay.
And so you're like, people are coming at that time, people were still coming into the pool faster than they ever depart.
And so then,
you get three people coming from the fleet that were supposed to go to flight school, and you get one guy going that week. Next one, you get two guys come in, two guys go out. Next one, you get four guys come in, one guy go out. So it was getting bigger, and then all of a sudden it started shrinking pretty rapidly. So that's what it is. It's a quintessential example of bad manpower planning by the United States Marine Corps.
Okay.
That's what it is.
It's like an accordion, and it's how they play their music. It's exactly all they ever do.
Yeah. So you can't really blame it because it is a very difficult. You see it in the airline industry too. It's a manpower planning. How many pilots do we need? How many flight attendants do we need? What's our plan schedule for the next 6 months? How are we going to work? I don't want to throw rocks because that's a thankless job and it's tough.
It's all being done by guys like us who are stashed somewhere waiting to start or do something. We have no idea what the hell we're doing.
Yeah.
Flip a coin. Look, I think you're right. Flip a coin planning is what's going on. Or often
OJT,
I used to hate this. And I called it planning or decision by default, which is I got no other majors I can send there. You're going.
Oh, but, yeah. And a lot of us, you're learning on the run because you don't really know. You're making a mistake. Oop, you make a 2-degree course correction to the right. Okay, that's good. Oop, too much. One back to the left.
Yeah.
So it's one of those things. So
and the guy in front of you didn't leave a pass down log.
Exactly. Now,
why would you do
that? That's why that was a hot issue for me. I'm like, I'm going
to
kill you.
Yeah. All right. One last thing, and then we'll get to the toilet paper. This was early on. You said RO. I know we know what it means, but what is a RO? You said they may be the RO.
The responsible officer.
What does that entail? What does that entail? It's a pain in the ass. So can you?
It entails slightly leaning forward from the waist, tipping your head like this, grabbing the back of your ankles, and saying, "Do you want to be my boyfriend?" And you bring some Vaseline when you do.
Don't clinch.
You get to sign for everything that the squadron has physically. Present.
Every desk, every chair.
Pen. Chair, the little footstool, the filing cabinet, the typewriter, blah, 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 blah. And then you sub-custody because that's when a couple guys decided they didn't want to sub-custody things out when we got to Japan after I did everything nicely for them. And I walked into the rooms and said, let me give it to you in really plain terms. You got about 20 minutes to sign this document because if you don't, I'm getting a flatbed truck and I'm taking all your shit out of here. And I'm going to give it to the first person I find that's Japanese, and you're going to be fooked for the rest of the time you're here for the next 6 months.
You can stand.
They're your decision
process. Stand in your office and do
your job. You now have 19 minutes. You better think fast, fucker. And that's kind of how I approached it at that point because I had about enough. It's a pain in the ass job. And that's, like you said, the Marine Corps.
It's a thankless job. It's a thankless job.
Yeah,
and if you do everything right, you never hear a word about it. But as soon as you fuck it up, it's all in your shit.
I never had a job in the Marine Corps that wasn't exactly like that. I never had a job that I never had a job that anybody ever wanted. I thought ASO would be. I was so grateful to get out of S4, and I go anything but S4. I always wanted to work in ops, and they go, "You're going to be the ASO," and I went, "Okay." And then I did that, and I went. The worst place to be in ASO is in BMAT 203 back then.
Yeah.
Highest mishap rate of any aircraft in U.S. military history. And you're the safety officer and you're in the training squadron. You're going to do some paperwork. You're going to be working your
lots.
I went in there with 10 pounds of ass. I came out with 2. It was gone. Yeah. It was just constantly typing. But I flew. I flew a ton. I had almost 1,500 hours of Harrier time in whatever it was.
Yeah. And nice part about being the safety officer, you usually had unfettered access to the decision makers in the squad.
Yeah,
you could walk right into the CO and the XO and go, this is screwed up.
Fix it. That was good. And you had access to all the other mishap reports and you could kind of learn a lot about the process.
That was quite a statistic you threw out there a few seconds ago.
Yeah.
Quite a statistic. heavy statistic, being the safety officer for VMAT 203, which had the, did you say the worst safety record in?
No, well, no, I didn't say that. The Harrier jet at the time had the worst mishap rate in the history of U.S. military aviation.
Yep.
You know, really? per 100,000 hours of flight time. Yes.
Even more than the A4, because I thought the A4.
Oh yeah.
We blew everybody else out of the water. I mean, it's just.
No, too many. We were like 4 per 100,000 hours or something.
It was, and that's why the Marine Corps always had to fight to keep the jet, because it was, you know, it had too many moving parts, and you know that quality spread and that cutting score were. From what I understood, I never saw what the number was, but somebody told me one time, because initially when you got in the Harrier community, when they started it, you had to be a test pilot. Had to. So they had no mishap rate, because all these guys were extremely vetted, and then they started kind of opening it up, and then they started crashing jets. And then by the time you guys and I were around, it was basically to kind of boil it down to, I can't remember who it was that told me, maybe it's one of my briefings as an ASO, he said, aviation safety officer, he said, we found through all of our statistical analysis that when you have a cutting score, that's your cutting score was your composite score at flight school. You know, your academics, your flight scores, your blah, 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 your this, that, and the other. And they said, if you're above this number, you're going to be okay. If you were below this number in the AVA, because if you look at tactical platforms, F-18 Hornet, much easier to fly, way better, more capable aircraft because of what all the things it can do, especially back then when they had the radar, we didn't, all that stuff. But he said, if your number was below this number on cutting score, you were going to eject, be dead, or both. Almost like clockwork. And I went, huh, I did not know that. So they kept trying to push people that would be moved to the Harrier community, make sure they were above that cutting score so they wouldn't be a smoking hole in the ground someplace.
Cutting score is, are you referring to the score out of composite score from flight school?
That's correct.
From flight school, okay, yeah.
From the day you got winged, yeah, from the day you got winged in... Up to, from when you started to the day you got winged, was your composite score was comprised of all the things you did up to that point. Yes.
Man, right. And Styx just put up the stat. I don't know where I got the number of like 31.77 mishaps per 100,000 flight hours.
It was a lot, man.
Good Lord.
It was a lot. Yeah. And so, I mean, really, when I got out of S4, I was like, oh, thank God. Man, I was out of the frying pan and just right into the
Can I go
fire.
Back to the S4, please, sir?
And then turned up the heat and went, oh, you know, one of those things. I'm like, God, I've never worked so hard in my life. I mean, I enjoyed it. It was fun, but it was just relentless.
How long were we at 203 together? When did you, let me ask, when did you leave 203?
I left in, I think, March of 93.
Okay, so I was the one that relieved you as the safety officer and then DSS there at 203.
Yes, I believe that's true.
That's how it worked. Because I remember we were in the same office together.
Yeah.
I had no idea who was doing what job. And I knew you left pretty early. And I seem to recall you had a package, a move package to Yuma, and you put return to sender.
Yeah, well,
address unknown.
They were pissed at me, and then like I told you, I got royally boned in 542, and it was going to be a double signer, but I actually the CO, I mean, obviously just anyway, senior officers in the squadron had done something that was illegal, fraudulent, and unethical, and they got called out by it by a guy who was a Naval Academy graduate and smart guy. Zero common sense. I mean, he's one of those guys that's like, dude, you're going to be dead if they don't take you out of the jet. You're brilliant.
He was a stupid smart guy.
Oh, my God. We went in Atlanta one time. We got on the ground at Dobbins, and he was running when he saw me walking toward him because I was going to kill him. I was like, he almost got me fucking killed. I wanted to kill him. I mean, he just, you know, and we were in the air, and I was brand new in the squadron, and he's a section leader. He shouldn't even be allowed to tie his shoes. And he's going, okay, we're going to do this and that and the other thing. And I'm looking at our gas. I'm going, no, we are not. We can't. And it's minimums. It's minimums in Dobbins. I'm going, we can't, dude. We got like 3,500 pounds of gas. We can't do that and that and survive without running out of fuel.
Minimums.
Yeah, just, you know, just gone. No thinking whatsoever. Anyway, he calls the squadron out on this stuff that's a big deal. And they shit can him out of the squadron, make him go be a FAC. So that's the first thing that's really screwed and fraudulent. And then they start pencil whipping all the records and let the perp just walk away from it. So we it had kind of blown up, and a guy was coming to the squadron who's, this is kind of funny stuff, it's kind of nefarious stuff. A guy was coming to the squadron whose girlfriend, subsequent wife, was General Gustafson's second MOF CG's adjutant.
Oh.
And she goes to CG second MOF and goes,
"Sir, can you do something to keep my fiancé from going to 542? Because it's really screwed up."
So it blows up. Phone calls flow down, and all of a sudden they call us in, all the JOs, they call us in. And we're pretty much unloading, and I've been getting screwed royally, and Vern got screwed too. I mean, he got royally screwed. I'm hot. And you know, if I get mad, I'm not nice anymore. I could be a real
It's not the nice, funny disco anymore, you're saying?
No. I was, and so anyway, we're in there in the CO's office, and Tom Rutledge struts throwing some pretty good hand grenades, and I'm kind of laughing, but I'm still mad. And so I kind of go, you know what? I'm gonna join in here. So I start throwing some claymores and hand grenades, and the CO can tell I'm pretty hot, and he's a little nervous. So he goes, "Okay, guys, thanks for the input, blah, 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 all that stuff. I guess we need to make some changes." He goes, "Disco, could you stay for a few minutes?" And I did. And it got pretty bad in there. You know, I'd been to justice school, so I kind of knew what I could say and what he couldn't say. And it got a little heated in there. And I knew the sergeant major was over the wall. And I basically threatened the CO. I said, "Go for it, dude. Let's do this." I said, I'll have you sitting across the street on Woody Gilliland's couch in 15 minutes. And you'll be retired in less than a week if you're lucky. And it scared him. And so by the fitter support changed. But when I got out at 203, yeah, because Smurf was like, "You're going to go to WTI. You're going to be my assistant ops. So I think we're going to 513. And I had orders. Yeah. And I was tempted because I always wanted to go to WTI. I did. You know, I was a great jet guy.
It's the Marine Corps version of Top Gun.
Yeah, weapons and tactics and structure.
I like being in the fleet. I like flying the great jets. I like jets with guns. I just like it. But, you know, I remember Scratch, I think it was Joe Jones, and Joe had sat on, great guy. He was the CEO of 532 at the time. He sat on multiple promotion boards, so he knew him. So everybody's trying to talk me into staying in at that time. You know, they're like, "You need to stay in." I'm like, "Well, if you knew what I knew, you probably wouldn't say that." So anyway, he goes, "Bring me your master brief sheet." I bring it in, I go, slide that thing across the desk like a turd, baby. And I'm smiling, just watching, because I can't wait to see the reaction. He's going, Oh. He's like, "What happened here?" I said, "Well, you know, I'll be going with the story. You just, you know, just going to just look at it." And so I tell him the story, and he's like, "Oh, okay." Mm. I said, "You know, I mean, I'd love to stay in. I want to stay in for 20 and everything, but I don't see, I'm going to go to 513. I got like 5, maybe 6 years in the gun squadron still. But then I'm going to be that guy that's, you know, at NARF or the group begging for flight time, you know, because, yeah, you know, I'll have to
then what to do with him. Yeah. Yeah. You're going to be a mid-level major.
Yeah. And RC command.
Yeah.
I mean, so now you're in 15, 16 years. And I'm not going to just sit around for the 5 years waiting for retirement, you know? So yeah. I'd have to figure out something else to do. So I was saying, "Well, okay, maybe I'll do the LSATs, go to law school, have the Marine Corps send me to law school and do whatever." But it just, you know, it was my path. Yeah. And that's where I was, and that's where I ended up. And I'm not bitter or angry about it. It just is, you know.
So you fell into a pretty good gig out of the Marine Corps.
Yeah, and when I look back, I always tell people, I say, I am grateful that I had the opportunity to do what I got to do, because it was an amazing blessing to do what we got to do, the experience I got to have. And like I said, the people I worked with were the finest Americans I've ever met in my life. Across the board.
Amen. Amen. Person company accepted. Is that what you're saying?
With the exception of you two assholes.
Whoa, why are you lumping me into that? Come on, I thought we had a thing.
Buddy, you know, when you're in the blast pattern, you're in the blast pattern. That's the way it works.
Hey, I heard this sideways, and I think I got it from Repeat. When you fell into your first job after the Marine Corps, you know, you had that opportunity.
Yeah.
you got orders like the same day, and you sent them back, like return to sender or something.
So anyway, what happened was I did a pit turn air to air off the coast. And before I left, I said to Drano, I said, "Hey skipper, can you, when I get done, can you stay around? Like, I need to talk to you." He goes, yeah, sure. He was staying late anyway. So I go in, and before I debrief, I go into Drano's office and I said, hey, just to let you know, I'm not going to be exercising my orders to Yuma. I'm going to be putting my letter of resignation. He goes, we don't have to let you out. I go, yeah, you kind of do. He goes, you took the bus. I went, no, I didn't. So then, you know, of course, the next day, who didn't take the bonus, and they, you know, they screw everybody else, and they wonder why people get frustrated.
Right.
And I'm like, you guys, you do this to yourselves all the time. But I didn't take the bonus, so they, of course, they have to let me out. But so what happens is my package gets hung up at S1 because they're dragging their feet, you know, hoping I'll just, yeah, whatever, I'll lose the job offer where I'm, you know, at Coca-Cola to fly for them. And I kind of figure, I go, something's going on. And I think, I can't remember if I talked to John Carnival, who was the S1. Funny dude. He's a funny guy.
Circus.
Yeah, you'd have to get to know Circus, though, because he's not funny if you first know him, but he'll throw a zing. He's like Vern. He'll throw a zinger out there. You're like, oh, my God, that was great.
Yeah. He's a sleeper.
Yes, he's a good shit. So anyway, I think he kind of found out through him. He goes, oh, yeah, they're hanging it up right now. So our old S1 officer, our S1 warrant from 542, Mike McGorick, great guy. He used to get so many. He counsels. You guys can't do that in front of my troops. Okay, McGorick.
Sorry, McGorick.
I know, because we're acting like teenagers, and he's, you know, trying to make us act like adults. It's just not working.
No.
So anyway, I call McGorick and I go, hey, here's what's going on. He goes, can you get a copy of your package? I go, I still have all the paperwork. I just submitted one. I have the originals. He says, send them to this address. So I sent them directly to WHQ, or, you know, HQMC, sorry. So they get to HQMC, and about 5 days later, it comes back down to 203. And they're like, what? How did he do that? You know, I just kept my mouth shut. So package gets processed, and there goes Disco out the door, man. Boom! So, I had mixed emotions. I really, really loved the Marine Corps. Even though I was bad-mouthing your Corps every day when I was around, motherfucker.
Right.
I mean, I have great respect for the organization, what it stands for, what it does.
And the professionals that do it. That's the thing.
Yeah. I mean, you know, but you can love the Corps and hate the Corps at the same time. You know, because there's stuff that
happens. If you don't, you aren't a Marine.
I think we all hated, you know, certain aspects of that, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's a people business, and if you run into people that, you know, there's just stuff. Oh, that's the other thing, too. When I got out, Drano wrote me up for a Navy comm, which, you know, it's a good medal.
Sure.
And then I had a couple conversations with people as I got out, and one's, you know, wanted to know, why are you getting out, and tell me the truth. I said, sure, want me to tell you the truth? So I tell him the truth. And when he was asking me why I didn't think a guy got promoted that he thought should have got promoted, and I just told him the truth based on my experience and what my observations were. He goes, you need to be careful what you say. And I went, you need to be careful what you ask, sir.
Right.
You don't want the truth.
Yeah.
Don't ask me the question. So he's the one, he shot down he turned it into a Navy Achievement Medal. I'm like, and that's why I hate the Marine Corps right there, is that kind of horseshit. Yeah.
Way to go.
Guys, pull. It's just juvenile, vindictive, childish crap that would piss me off. And it was that kind of stuff.
How many good years did you have in the Marine Corps? Let me see. How many years was it?
I was in about nine and a quarter, roughly.
9.25 years.
All right. 9.25.
9.25. And how much flight time did you leave the Marine Corps with?
Oh man, I had like 1378 ABA time. So I had over, I don't know, 1600 hours. I flew a lot.
Yeah. Hey, especially at 203. Could build a lot of time fast there.
That was also anytime they said, would you like to fly? The answer was, well, yes.
Well, yeah,
hell yeah. That's why I'm here.
Yeah.
See these things on my chest? That's why I'm here.
Let me guess. Hey.
So
I got a question for both you guys, because you were both aviation. Both Utes were aviation safety guys, right? At one point.
Oh, yeah.
Were you the safety and ATOPS guy in 223, right? Repeat.
I was.
So there was a certain hour limit. When you hit that hour limit, when a naval aviator hit that hour limit, he was probably the most dangerous like animal on the planet.
Yep.
Because do you remember what that was? Because it wasn't a lot, but it was like, holy shit.
I think it was between 300 and 500 hours.
Statistically, it was the danger zone.
Yeah, yeah. Statistically, once you were 500 hours, you were statistically likely to be involved in a mishap.
Yeah, because you knew enough, and you were stupid enough to think you knew enough.
Yeah.
You became too confident.
It's complacency bleeds contempt, right?
Yeah. Well, they even said in 203, the worst thing to have, and I remember it, you know, a couple of times I went flying with Woody, and we got counseled by Drano when we got back because of something we did. He goes like, "You freaking idiots." So Woody was ops, and he's writing the schedule, and I'm an ASO in the squadron. He's just going, "Morons. I'm surrounded by morons."
Yeah.
You know, and it was like, and Woody and I just looked at each other and go, "Yeah, I guess he's right." But we had all this experience. I was like the stand of battle officer, you know, and I was giving NATOPS checks and all this stuff. And it's like, I know better, you know, kind of just, yeah. We did something. I can't remember what it was. It was something really, you know, dipshitty. So it happens.
Nice.
Speaking of Woody, I got to tell you guys this.
Are you in touch with Woody?
Not as much as I used to be, but yeah, we ping back and forth a few times.
Because he's kind of been lost to much of the Harrier community. People have asked about him.
Yeah, he's the program's director for nuclear policy for NATO. So there's your problem, what? Right?
Oh, what? Well, there you go.
Yeah, he's a GS, whatever. Yes, he's busy. And so he'll ping at me. We were pinging each other. I used to see him all the time 10 years ago. He'd come out to Napa and stay with my wife and I, you know, go on his way to Colorado Springs, you know, go to Cheyenne Mountain. He just do this kind of roundabout through Stuttgart and stay with us. And he just got so busy. I mean, I'll hear from him a couple of times a year. But Woody and I, it was relentless, the shit we would do to each other. So one day, Orozco was my corporal in safety. And I went down there. He would take stuff down. I don't know why he got lassoed in it, but he'd take stuff down to the shredding room where it takes everything, all the classified stuff turns into little tiny dots.
Yeah.
And one day he's got like these two huge garbage bags full of shredded documents. They're just dots. And he comes in the door, and I would do all kinds of, I would take that stuff and I put it in people's helmet bags and then go on the road. You know? And shit like, I told you, I'm a clown. I put the Kotexes all over Mongoose's car, I'll tell you that one too. Right. That was Woody and I. So anyway, I look at Orozco and he's walking out the door. Hey, come back here. I said, hey. I go, what are you doing with this? He goes, I'm going to take him to get him burned up. And I'm going, no, we're not, man. So Woody bought Scooter's old truck, that old piece of shit, green 1962, whatever the hell it was, Chevy manual, you know, stock thing.
Three on the tree.
Didn't have an air conditioner, had a heater. And he always leave the windows, he would ever lock it and leave the windows rolled, you know, partly rolled down. So I go, come on, let's go. So we took those two massive bags, like 30-gallon bags, and we filled Woody's cab completely full of that shit.
of the dots?
As far as it would go, I mean, the windows were open like this much, and it was like a sea all the way across.
No, no.
So he gets back, and Woody's like, I know who did this. So he comes to my house.
You saw me, you can't prove a thing.
He takes winter rye and puts it on my grass. It grows up and says, Disco, you're a faggot, or something like that. So it's growing green in the winter on my front lawn.
Great.
You know, and just like...
Great.
So this is like, we do this back and forth. But yeah, that was one of the best ones I did to Woody, was filling his car full of those things. That was awesome.
All right. So, I got two things written down here. I got to circle back real quick. S1. What is S1?
I know what it is. The admin department. So okay. S1's administration, S2 is intelligence, S3 is operations, S4 is logistics. So those are the one. A lot of times you hear the terms, hey, I want to see the one and the two. You know, you're like, huh? So the CO wants to see admin and intelligence. Or, hey, I want to see the three. OPSO. So I was going to be Smurf's assistant OPSO. So the assistant OPSO out in BMA 513, he would have been the OPSO for 513 when we went out there. So he'd have been the three.
Thank you.
In those terms. Yeah, man. Hey, ask away.
Other one from the circling back very beginning was, explain what a stream stow is, if you would, please.
So a stream stow is, we'd do a 4-ship stream stow, typically it was 2-ship. So the Marine, you know, Harrier, Hornets, you see those guys that line up in parade formation like this on the runway.
They take off next to each other.
Sometimes they'll do 10-second goes. So Lee will go, and 10 seconds later, -2 goes. Or they'll do a section go same time. Or you see the blue fairies do it. They do the diamond, you know, the fingertip like this.
Yep.
And then the other guy over here, and then he underneath.
Four
slides into the slot. So then they got the diamond. So Harriers, because of the way we took off and goofy with it, our weight turbulence and all the other nonsense, they did, through all the studies, it was like 1,000 feet. Typically, you're going to be airborne by 1,000 feet. So we would, you know, you do a stream stow, you do 4-ship, and dash last would get at the very end of the runway, 1,000 feet down, be three, another 1,000, and stagger on the runway. So, you know, here's 4, here's 3, here's 2, here's 1. And then you go, say that I was a lead for a four ship. And that's the other thing, 203, you were really a division lead. You weren't a section lead leading another section. So when you're taking out a division of students, man, you were busy.
Oh, yes, you were.
I had a student one time, we're coming into the break, we're going like 470 or something like that. I get everybody, I'm like, he's over there. Yeah. They make space.
Get boards, cross under, yep.
Yeah, there's four over there right now, and I'm about ready to break. And thank God, I go, there's dash two again.
He crossed himself back under.
He was on the wrong side.
You're going to break into him.
Oh, my God.
Because so it's hard looking right.
Thank God I looked, because I'd have just gone right into him. And I go, of course, I use a few epithets, but I depart and re-enter. Anyway, but it just stupid stuff students would do. So same stuff. So we're all on the runway staggered. And he'd be like, disco's rolling, go. And then as soon as you're rolling, go, everybody's at full power. And so you'd see, if you were in the dash last, you'd see all these four jets. You'd just see kind of a smoke cloud and dust from runway detritus and all that stuff. And all of a sudden you see, bleep, all these four jets just pop up out of the smoke. And then everybody's nozzling out. They're easing their nozzles back. Gears coming up. When they get to a certain speed, flaps come up from stall to auto. And everybody kind of goes and eventually joins up, lead turns in, and everybody kind of just slides into position.
It's pretty awesome.
It's a beautiful thing when done right. Yeah.
Yeah. And the thing, too, is the Harrier accelerates so freaking fast. So as soon as you get off the ground and you hit those nozzles aft, I mean, it's like a kick in the ass, yeah, right?
Well, somebody told me, when you first go, because you're at, I think it was 10 degrees nozzles, if I remember right.
It was just cracked.
Full power. Somebody told me that an AV-8 can outrun F-15, F-18, yep. F-16 to 300.
Oh, and, yeah, to 400.
About 400 knots, and then those intakes are a great big speed brake.
Yeah, that thing, the whole thing's a speed brake, but that thing could accelerate. I mean, the first time I got in it, because when I was at Cherry Point, I went up, my VT-26, my old T-2 squadron came through there for the boat. And one of the instructors took me out in the back seat, and so we go full power in the T2. I'm going, is it going to accelerate anytime today?
Are we going to go?
Back when you were a T2 student, you were hanging on a tailplane.
Stuff was happening fast, yeah.
Yeah, but you're in the AV-8, you're just going, this thing, it is basically like a cat shot in the T2. An amazing thrust of power initially.
I always estimated 3 to 4 Gs straight back.
Yeah,
it was.
Yeah, for a pilot, I mean, I tell people, for a pilot, it was the most fun airplane on the planet. There's nothing more fun to do a vertical takeoff and pull that nose up 75 degrees, just keep going. It was like,
It's like the closest thing to to being an astronaut, a launch pad, right?
I tell people,
it's like the Atlas rocket taking off.
I tell people it was the most fun I ever had with my pants on, and it's true.
Yep, absolutely. In fact, Punky once told me, I asked him, you got to fly the Hornet, you got to fly the MiGs, you got to fly, he did the test pilot thing. Okay. Fly all these airplanes. What was the most fun? He goes, hands down, the Harrier. It's a stick and rudder airplane, not fly-by-wire. It's just a beast of a jet to fly.
Yeah, it was awesome. Awesome airplane.
All right, Disco. Kotek's Mongoose.
Oh, yeah. Okay, I'll do that one, then I'll go to the toilet paper.
Yep.
So Mongoose would, it's kind of started off with Theodoric Herman. Theodope, Mongoof, that guy, my CEO. Anyway, he had that just jackass, ugly piece of shit BMW motorcycle. He just loves that thing. Every time he looks at it, he rubs one out in the corner. I'm like, really? It's the ugliest motorcycle on the planet. So one day he's gushing about how amazing my motorcycle is. I'm like, and when he spoke Spanish, he spoke it with the Castilian lisp. That one time he's like, ¿cómo está, señor? And I looked at him and went, you sound like a fag. So that went over really well. I didn't sugarcoat things. So anyway, I find that hard to believe, first of all.
I'm going to deal with that.
I showed up to have fun. So anyway, he had that motorcycle out in the parking lot one day. I'm like, so I went to the exchange and I got a little plastic pink basket. And little tassels for the handlebars. I got a little tiger tail with a flag on it. And I put all these little, I put all this shit on his motorcycle. And he was pissed. He was furious. And he knew who would get it. He goes, he's really pissed off. And so I was still in 542.
I can only see that. God, I would give anything to see that. Little streamers, you know, like little girl's 4th of July bicycle.
Yeah, he was yeah. So because I defiled his baby. And so a couple days later, he lets the air. I had that Honda 750 Magnum. He lets the air out of my tires. I'm like, fuck. You know, so I'm like, okay, all right, fucker. So I go get to find a place. I had to go find, you know, they bring the car out, they pump my tire. You know, the maintenance guys bring my car. You know, I'm like, yeah. So now I'm in 203, and that's when he did that. I'm like, okay, I've had enough of this shit. He was a group XO. And so the next day I go to Woody. I go, hey, what are you doing right now? He goes, nothing. I go, come on, let's go. So we get in my car. We go over to the exchange, and we're walking down in the ladies' lingerie, you know, all the other shit, the ladies section, you know, FDS spray. Saddles for your hoot nanny, maybe a Kotex or two. So we go in there, and I get these two big, I mean, they're this big, you know, like, there we go.
Couple feet,
giant box.
This big. And there's probably, no, it's just a big, huge plastic bag. And I think each one was 250, you know, the little crotch saddles, you know,
Mini pads.
Mini pads.
Yeah, mini pads with the sticky strip on them, you know.
With the wings.
In case you want to stick them to your panties. So anyway, we get two bags of those, and Woody's like, what are we going to do with these? I said, just shut up, let's go. So we go back to 203, and I grab one, and I grab both of them. I start walking across the street toward the group, and Woody's just kind of following me. And we walk around to the side, and I go,
wait a minute. Well, hold on a second. This is broad daylight, right? This is happening.
Two Marine captains walking along with.
Yeah, two captains. We got these big bags of Kotexes. One captain's walking with these things, and so anyway, I just rip it open and I start going, bang. And Woody looks at me and he goes, oh my God, you're going to do this? I go, yeah, I am.
Yeah, we're doing this.
We got enlisted troops walking out and they're cracking up.
Because they
and we put about 800 of those things all over Mongoose's, I think it was his wife's Honda Civic or whatever.
No. No.
Anyway, that night I go home, I'm at home, when I got home, there was a message on the, there was two messages on the, back when we had answering machines. Two messages on the answering machine. The first one was Colonel Kuznewski, K9.
Yeah.
He's like, Disco, that was shit hot. I know it was you. You're the only one that would be stupid enough and crazy enough to do something like that. He goes, it was awesome. Mongoose wanted to fucking kill you. And the next call was from Mongoose. And he's like, I'm going to kill you. I hate you. You're a piece of shit. I mean, just. And I'm listening to his message. I'm going, it's a beautiful day.
So this is obviously before cell phones. Did you not get a picture of this? Because
no,
that would
I
be
didn't. No.
Okay. So in my mind's eye, I'm seeing this BMW Enduro road bike motorcycle that's completely wallpapered in panty liners.
No, that was his car that I did. That.
Oh, his car. Oh, his car.
Yes. Yeah.
So his motorcycle is one of those ugly ass BMW, like 1962. It's got a horizontally opposed little gate.
Oh yes. Okay. It was a car, you know, okay.
It looks like the Wicked Witch of the West would ride it. You know, it's just. I'm like, really? You think that's cool? That's not cool. That's just wrong in every level. So yeah, that was another Woody and Disco escapade. Woody got. I recruited to do some of my shit with me because I just was always looking for trouble. That's the way I was.
There you go.
And by the time I got close to the end of my time in the Marine Corps, I was just kind of like, you know what? I don't care. I'm going to have fun. If you don't like it, what are you going to do? Right.
Well, you were kind of a dangerous animal at that point.
Yeah.
I mean, really. What are they going to do to you?
Yeah. I mean, I didn't realize, but they were kind of mad when I got out just because even though they were trying to reduce manpower, the number of manpower in the Marine Corps, the Harrier community was short. And I had every qual, so that was your more quals you have, obviously, the more valuable you are to them. Because I was just finishing up my FCF. Yeah, I was just finishing my FCF, so then when I got to Yuma, you know, to go to WTI, they kind of wanted you to have all your quals when you showed up at WTI. So I was really excited about that prospect, but when I got that offer from Coca-Cola, I went,
yeah.
You know, sometimes you have to use your head and not your emotions. So I made the other decision. So you guys have time because the toilet paper.
We got plenty of time.
Yeah, we got another bit of time.
We're in great shape. So
the toilet paper, so we get back from, and I got sent back as the advance party, which I didn't want to do, but I ended up getting, and that's when my wife and I got married in Cherry Point. And then I, you know, you get to have my honeymoon because we got deployed immediately. We go back to Cherry Point. I'm the advance party for that, getting everything set up for the squadron again for, you know, coming back to Cherry Point, North Carolina.
Hey, a quick question. When you guys deployed to Westpac, did you take your jets or did you guys swap out with somebody?
We took our jets there.
Okay.
When we came home, we left our jets there, and 231 left us. I think it was 231. Yeah, it was 231. Left us their shitty jets.
Right.
And
okay.
So our maintenance people were pissed when we got home. Yeah, but I'll tell you what, Jimmy Lee, man, that guy, he's one of the best AMOs I've ever seen. That guy, our utilization rate and our number of jets that were up in the Persian Gulf War was like 90%. That guy had stuff getting maintained. Repainted everything, all gray.
You guys were back. Was 542 or 231 the ones that went basically from Westpac all the way to?
That was 231, I think.
It was 231. CRP combat readiness percentage. Is that what that was? The CRP numbers?
Ours,
we had the highest ones at that time in the whole community because we had just come from Westpac.
231 relieved you guys in Westpac.
Correct.
Okay, got it.
Yeah. So they took our jets. When we came back, we took their jets. But when we came back, you know, because you're thinking, hey, we're untouchable for at least a year, blah, blah, blah. And the Marine Corps goes, oh, no, you're in the Marine Corps. You're not in the Navy or the Air Force. You're the most highly trained Marines. You're going to Saudi Arabia. So the first units that were there were VMA 542, F-15s from Langley, one squadron, and a battalion landing team of Marines. So we were it.
Where did you land in Saudi? Where?
We went to Sheikh Isa in Bahrain.
Sheikh Isa, okay.
Yeah, and we were flying combat. We were flying CAP in the Northern Persian Gulf, you know, with winders on our live winders on our jets. I'm going, what the hell are we doing here? And we had bombs. I mean, it was pretty dicey because we were kind of bluffing with the Iraqis not to come south of the border.
Yeah.
Because they thought we had more there than we actually did. Yeah. So anyway, we go over there, and I don't know, somewhere I'd read not too long before that, I think I read a book by Leon Uris or something. I read all the time. So I was reading this book and I went, the Saudis don't wipe their ass. They use water picks like you use on your teeth, but they use it for their ass and their left hand. You don't shake hands with a Saudi with your left hand. You shake with your right hand. Yeah. But you show them your feet to insult them and tell them their mom is ugly and she doesn't shave her biscuit. So anyway, there's my squadron, man.
There it is. Flying tag.
So Styx put up the squadron VMA 542 logo. Yeah. And I've actually got something to talk about on that, too.
That's the new one. That's the VMFA for the F-35s. So anyway, I got I had a really good relationships because, hey, you know, my kind of my rules as I went through the Marine Corps was, hey, you know, wanted to have in my circle of influence was, hey, make friends, don't be a dick. That's kind of how I live. So the guys at S-4 in the Marine Corps property, I had great friends over there with all the staff NCOs and all the enlisted guys. Anything I needed, I could get. I was like radar, man. If we needed it, I could get it. I'd figure out a way, or those guys would figure out a way to get it for me. Because when I left 542, when I left there, they got all these whiteboards. I got the CO a brand new Marine Corps flag that says VMA because he wanted the old one. I just got him all this stuff because I made friends over there. So when we're in this interim period between these two deployments, I went over there and said, hey, I need a 6-cube box, which is big. You know, 6x6x6. I said, I want you to fill that thing full of shit paper. Nothing but shit paper. And they went, really? I said, just do it. So they load this thing full of shit paper. That's part of our packet to go to Saudi Arabia. We get over there, and we're there for a little bit of period of time. We have all this butt wipe. Nobody else in the theater has any shit paper. Nobody. And we don't have any vehicles because we're the Marines. So we don't have anything. We do everything. We build our own tents. We build this. We build that. We dig our own straddle tents. Put up our, you know, all that crap. Then the Air Force shows up. It's a Seymour Johnson F-4 Phantom Wild Weasel Squadron. There are 1,200 people.
1,200 people in the squadron.
In this squad. It was just this massive amount of people in this support. You mean they had these incredibly huge, they poured these huge concrete pads. They put these double-walled tents, HVAC units on them. And for us, it was 1950s era Korean War GP tents. And if you want air conditioning, you roll them up.
Yeah,
and
right.
We were on the dirt. We were living on the dirt, but we, you know, put everything up. So we were stealing the Air Force blind. So anyway, you got these all these Air Force guys, and they had, you know, what, 25 or whatever Humvees.
Yeah.
And we didn't have anything. And we needed, because we had a flight line, we had maintenance, we had our billeting, we had all this stuff. Everybody was walking everywhere. I'm like, this fucking sucks the big, it sucks the, it licks the pouch. Let me put it that way. So anyway, we're doing all this stuff. And then one day I'm sitting here, I got my bag unzipped down just above my belly button, you know. Got my fly naked shirt, green one on from the Philippines underneath there. You can see it, you know, kind of showing through.
Yeah.
And I got those little expeditionary discs, those little pieces of shit that are, you know, like 1.5 by 1.5 and little swing down arms.
Yes.
Card tables with.
And then, yes. Of course, it's not a chair. So I made a chair from MRE boxes and duct tape because that's what we do in the Marine Corps. So I'm sitting in there in my tent, man. I'm sweating like a pig. I got my flight. Actually, I had my flight suit wrapped around my waist. So that's why you can see my fly naked. Got my feet on my desk, and these four Air Force officers walk in, two majors, two captains, flight suits zipped up to here, the little hats on their heads, and they walk in, and they go, "You going to stand for the majors?" I go, "Nah, probably not today." And I'm looking at them, and they go, "Well, you know, it's disrespectful." I said, "Well, you're in my world, so no is the answer."
Yeah,
they're looking at me, and they don't say anything, and they finally go, "Hey, we hear you have toilet paper." I go, "I got a shitload of toilet paper." So we get this back and forth. And they're just thinking, "Hey, we're going to just ask you for something. You're going to give it to us." And I went, let me walk you through the way things work around here. You're talking to a Marine. We're like a hooker. We don't do anything for free. There's a price for everything. If you want to see the biscuit, you got to decorate the mahogany, bitch. You got to put some money on the table.
Right.
I said, "So what do you guys have?" And they go, "Well, you know, we can get you this. We can get you that." And I said, "You know what I really need?" I said, "I really need a Humvee." And they go, "We're not going to jump me." And I go, "Well, you're not going to be able to wipe your ass at either. That's the way it works." I said, "I know you guys."
That's the way of the world, bro.
Yeah, I already talked to your guys. I go, "I know you guys got 25 or whatever. It was some ridiculous number of Humvees. I'll tell you what. I got a buttload of really talented Marines. You guys get me a Humvee. We're only going to be here for another 3 months. I will bring that thing back to you. And I'm not kidding you. I'll take care of it. It'll be looking like it's brand new. We'll PM it. We'll take care of it. We won't scratch it. And we'll get it back to you like it's brand new. But if you want to wipe your ass, I'm going to have a Humvee. And that's my final offer. I got a Humvee." So I had a Humvee. I drive it up to our squadron headquarters, and Mongoose is there. He's looking at me. He says, "U.S. Air Force on the side." He goes, "Is that for me?" I went, "Fuck no, Skipper." I said, "This is mine.
Get your own damn Humvee."
"Is that for you?"
He looks at me and he goes, "You're a son of a bitch." And I said, "I'll tell you what, Skipper." I said, "I'm just laughing. You know, I go, I'll tell you what. I go, I got it for the squadron. He goes, "How'd you get it?" I said, "Just don't worry about it. I just got it." I go, "We have it for the rest of the time we're here. It's for the whole squadron. So it's for log runs. It's for maintenance. It's for whoever. But we got to take care of it. So I'm going to go talk to maintenance. I'm going to find a couple guys. I'm going to go talk to the maintenance officer and say, hey, we got to take care of this thing because I made a promise to these gay uniform wearing zipper high Air Force
Ascot wearing,
and I said, I promised them I'm going to be good for my word, and it just I was able to get it." He goes, "I don't know how you get these stuff." I said, "I can get anything. I just know how to, just have to learn how to communicate." So anyway, that's how I got I got a Humvee, and I got it for shit paper. So I just remember that. I'm like, "God, that was beautiful."
That is a great story, and I can't stop. I mean, I want to come back to this because this kind of, I mean, it's a good comparison. So you deployed with a Harrier squadron to Saudi Arabia. How many people in the squadron?
Oh,
how many total?
Roughly three. So that was an interesting thing too, because all of a sudden, you know, never the whole time. Back in the day, it was a 20 jet squadron. I don't think any squadron in Cherry Point had more than 15, 18 pilots. Now, they had enough to man up based on TO, but everybody was, you know, you have shitty little job officer. This guy's at the group. This guy's at the wing. This guy's over here. This guy's over there. So you had to donate all these people, or the shitbirds of the squad. That was the thing, too, I learned from flight school is just because you have your wings doesn't mean you have success.
Doesn't mean you get the flag.
Now you got to get the flag. Hey, and then you have to be able to survive.
You have to go be the mayor of Bogfield.
Hey, that's a good segue. Let's talk about that for a second, because you're spot on, and I'm glad you brought that up. I explain this to guys all the time. You know, when you say, so you make it through all the widgets, you actually get through the Harrier training squadron, and you get to your fleet squadron, and they find out you're a douchebag. What happens to guys like that, Disco?
Well, I mean, typically 15 to 20% of the people don't make it through their first tour. So they're just they can't do a ground job and fly, or they can't fly because they're doing their ground job and they just don't measure up, or they can't get their shit together, and or they piss people off and they just don't get along with people or something like that. And then next thing you know, that guy's going on a fact tour and you never see him.
Or what else? First of all, what's a fact tour? Say what a fact tour is.
Forward air controller. And it's actually a career enhancing tour. But
sure, if you do it right.
Yeah, right. But nobody wants to do it because you're out of the cockpit.
Right.
And you're just, if you're brand new in the cockpit. So the thing that when you have retrospect, you look back on your time in the Marine Corps, you realize just because I got, you think you're all that in a bag of chips when you get your wings. And then you show up at the rag and, you know, we had tried it maybe when I was in circuit for 2 years, we tried it like four people. So, you know, it's a 10%-ish, something like that. They don't even make it through the rag. They just can't, fly the airplane. They just can't do it. And for their own safety or just because they can't get along with people, it's like, hey, you're gone. You're out of here. Yeah. But then there's another thing. You get to a gun squadron, and I saw people in gun squadrons. They'd be there for 6 months, and all of a sudden they're gone. And maybe they did something stupid. Right. They almost crashed a jet by being an idiot.
Where would they go, Disco? Where does somebody
get? They usually get transferred. Like, there was a guy, I don't like to say his name, but he punched out of two jets in 542. Uh-huh. And I went to some class when I was brand new in the squadron. I show up and he's got, you know, a 542 patch on. He's like, well, you know, and everybody in the squadron said that guy is the biggest dipshit. So what he basically was he was a SLJL.
Shitty little jobs officer.
Shitty little jobs officer. Thank you.
They just found shit for him to do while he was still obligated to the Marine Corps.
Yeah, to keep him from flying jets and hurting somebody, right?
And they needed somebody to do some scut work that nobody else wanted to do, so they found scut work for him to do. Right. And so, you know, as a forward air controller tour, or you know, you go to the wing and you're the assistant opso at the wing, which means you do nothing.
Rifle range,
and
safety.
You go to lunch every day. If you're lucky, some squadrons will give you, you know, 1 hour a month, so you're barely, you know, safe, or they'll give you 2 hours a month.
Right.
So you never really, but nobody wants you in a gun squadron. They don't want you there because you're incompetent, stupid, can't get along, or you're just irritating. So that's just the way it is. Which begs the question,
how about the guys that couldn't get along, were incompetent, stupid, and irritating, and managed to stay in the gun squadrons? Those are the ones that drove you nuts.
Yeah, and when I got to 542, it was a weird environment when I got there. Yeah. I never really experienced anything like that. And based on my experience in the infantry, the leadership in the unit, I was like, what is wrong with this place? You guys are just, they ate their young, they treated people like shit, especially the JOs.
Yeah.
And we basically, as Tom Rutledge and I sat down one day, and as we started kind of, people started moving out of the squadron, when new guys would come in, we would grab them initially and pull them off a side and sit them down and say, here's how this place runs. Here's what we're trying to do to change the culture, because the culture is beyond sick here. It needs to be fixed. And that also helped because we had a change of command at the top and started trickling down. We got in ops, we got Dog, Wade Straw. Awesome dude. He was amazing. Yeah. You know, hey, motherfucker, you know what? I like being a colonel, because now that I'm a colonel, that means that many more people's butt face, I can rub my balls all over.
Vapor had some great Dog stories.
Oh, he was amazing. Dog was just, I don't know how many times he'd laugh like this. I don't know how many times I'd sit down with that guy and I'd be in hysterics. I mean, he was so funny and fun to be around. I mean, he's a ball, but yet he didn't gamble with him. Pisser to clean him out so many times. It was unbelievable.
Oh, man.
Oh, man. All right. Dog wanted to kill Pisser.
All right. Well, so hang on. So there we go. There's a call sign there, Pisser. And we're hoping to get him on. But go over his call sign story, and then I'm going to ask you to go over yours. I don't know yours. It may be disappointing.
Hey, but listen, I'm sorry. I got to apologize. I checked out just for a second. I came back, and I heard Pisser. So but before you go into the call signs, these guys, Pisser and Disco, were on the cover of Time Life magazine.
Yes. Yes, they were.
No, we weren't on Time Life. We were actually featured in People magazine.
Oh, was it People? I thought it was Time.
Yeah, and the reporter was a smoke show. Her name was Maria Wilhelm.
Okay, let's come back to that.
She wore perfume, and I hadn't smelled perfume and seen a woman in I don't know how many months. So I was like,
of course. Yes.
You're like a dog. You're like a dog.
Yes.
You know, like a buck, you know, going... So let me tell you. So this is the day of that interview, I'm going to tell you a pisser story. So I don't remember. We're flying a mission. So we talked to him a little bit in the morning. The photographer, I swear to God, he was based on. Actually, do you remember Dennis Hopper in Apocalypse Now? When he was the photographer.
Yeah.
Okay, the guy that was the photographer, I think Dennis Hopper was based on this guy. His name was Ken Regan. I mean, he's like, it's a great man. It's a great day, man. It's a beautiful day, man. I mean, he was just like
just,
him.
Just like that.
And I think I even asked him, I said, you remind me of Dennis Hopper in Apocalypse Now. And he said, they based his character on me, man. And I'm not surprised. So anyway, this guy, we met him in the morning. We did all this stuff. You know, they just kind of grabbed us. We were getting briefed. In fact, that picture I sent you, Repeat, where Pisser and I are briefing, it looks like. You see both our backs. That was Ken Regan taking a picture while we were briefing that morning. We're going.
Oh, sweet.
We look over our shoulders and go, who are you? Go away. You know, leave us alone. We're busy. We're about to go fly a mission. So we did a pit turn mission that day. So we get up airborne. We're going on a hot target. It's one of the airfields in Kuwait. There were, I think, there were three, if I remember right. I don't remember which one it was. But anyway, Mike and I go up there, and we're, you know, we're, I don't know, 17 to 20,000 feet. So you're above most of AAA and the man pads. So we go there. We can see. We see our, I can't remember if we found our target. Maybe it was a kill box or something like that. So we're in there in combat spread. And Watashi-san was the idiot that was going in first. So, and we could actually can't, it's so flat out there. The camo nets, the desert camo nets.
Yeah.
Well, they just stick up. It's like, it looks like a ward over there. Let me guess what that is. There's a bunch of cocksuckers underneath there right now looking up at us. So I roll in and I come down and I'm, you know, and we had a rock eye at 4 second delay. Well, you didn't get any, I mean, the Marine Corps didn't pay for the algorithms for the symbology until you got to, I can't remember what the altitude was.
Yeah, it was way down into the Wes before you got symbology.
Yeah, so anyway, you see everybody taking your picture. You go, wait a minute, that's not everybody taking my picture. Those are muzzles pointing at me, shooting. It looks like all these little flash bulbs going off. Yeah. And everybody's shooting at your ass. And so you're going, fuck this. You know. So I'm going down and I don't have any symbologists. You're trying, and you're just kind of swagging. You just, you know, it's you know, it's the TLAR, you know, that looks about right, you know, system. And you're kind of going, and all of a sudden symbology comes up and kind of fix, you know, kind of fine-tune everything. You're on government time, everybody's shooting at you, now you're predictable. You know, not a good place to be at low altitude. So I drop my ordnance, and it's a nice hard 6G pull. And I'm just, and I don't know, I bottom out at, I don't know, whatever we're, between 65 and 8,000 feet. So you're in the band, baby.
Heart of the envelope.
Yeah, so I'm coming up, and I'm doing the funky chicken. About every 6 seconds, I'm just moving the jet. And I'm trying, you're doing a double negative. You're trying to climb and put G on the airplane and maneuver it to keep from getting shot down. You don't have a lot of G capability. Yeah. So it's just a, you know, it's like a, you know, you're doing one of these things just hoping you survive. I don't know what's going on. And there's nothing but silence on the radio. So I'm climbing up, and I'm with the urinator. We're climbing up, and all of a sudden, I know I'm out of the – I mean, I'm like about 20,000 feet. I'm like, oh, okay, that was good. And I didn't see anything – you know, a lot of times you'd see stuff going by like this. You see the tracer, you know, as it goes by you, even during the day, because now you're seeing the ass end of that round and that nice glowing end as it goes by you. Nighttime was another – Nighttime was suck because then you could see everything. Look at the little butterflies floating up toward me. And so anyway, all of a sudden, Numbnuts goes, whoa. And I'm like, whoa, what? He says, Disco, that was awesome. I go, what was awesome? He said, dude, every time, you know, when you came off target, man, all this stuff just opened up around you. You were surrounded by AAA. It was right behind your jet. And at just about the time it get to you, you jink. And then it kind of get, you know, swing back and it start following you again. And then you jink again. And then he goes, it was amazing. And I went,
what?
Why didn't you say anything to him?
Yeah, what?
Goes, and it was silence. And he goes, oh. And I said, when we get on the ground, I'm going to find you, and I'm going to shoot your ass with my 9mm. I swear to God, I'm going to kill you. So anyway, he rolls in. He goes down. He's dashed too, so now they know he's coming.
Sure.
So I'm watching the show, and I'm just going, oh, my God. I mean, he is surrounded by AAA. And he comes off target, same thing, but I'm going, break left, break right, go left, go down, go up, do this, do that. Because I could see it following him. Yeah. And just before I get to him, I'm like, you need to go left. Break left. Okay, go down. Reverse. Go right. And it's just like, it's like this snake of flashbangs just following him around until it finally stopped. And I said, man, when we get on the ground, I am going to fucking kill you. So we get on the ground and we were laughing about it. You know, after we took like 10 steps, but I'm just going, actually, we did a pit turn and we talked on the radio and I'm like, you motherfucker. I was cussing him out.
You got
it. We went and did another mission. We came back and, you know, as we get out of our jets, we kind of look at each other. We start cracking up like, hey, we made it. This is good. This is a good day.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But so Mike got his, I'll tell you, this is a story from Korea.
It's a great one.
So we're in some, you know, and you go to these little bars in Korea, and there's the mama san, there's all the girls and all that stuff around. We're drinking beer and all that. And then I go in and take a piss, and there's a guy in there fanning your ass with a, you know, to try and get a tip. I'm like, hey, don't fan my ass. Get away from me. Man, I don't want to breeze in my crack. Get out of here. So I'm up there, and it's the pig trough. You're like, and I got, you know, I got my half inch, I got my 1.2 inches of dangling fury. And I'm taking a leak there in the trough, and all of a sudden, Pisser stands up next to me, and he just starts backing up. Yeah. And he just backs up, and he backs up. Now it's hitting the wall, and it's splashing on me, and I'm kind of moving sideways. And he's 15 feet from the freaking urinal. You know, and he's got his schlong kind of, he does this little thing.
Hold on. I want to stop here.
Yeah.
That is not an exaggeration.
No, it's not.
This dude.
It's
not.
No.
This dude could piss over a car.
Oh, yeah. Well, I got.
He can piss across the street.
Oh, yeah. Hold on.
I got two. Keep going. The other one. Pisser and I are in Kunsan.
He's just
pissing there, and I'm like going, hey, you're getting me wet. He's just laughing. He's just cracking up. I'm like, fucker, I'm going to kill you. I think we were actually in Kunsan. So we met all these F's. It was the Pantons and the Juvets, F-16 guys. Great guys. Fun dudes. Yeah. And so we're in there with these guys, and we're kind of talking. We're, you know, drinking, being stupid, getting smarter by the minute. And so anyway, these guys are talking shit, and I go, hey, all right, monkeys. I said, I bet you I can get him. You go out and pick any car out in the street you find, and he's going to piss over it. And if he does, you're buying us beer for the rest of the weekend. So, man, it's, you know, 40 people go piling outside, all these F-16 guys with little mama son girlfriends, me and Pisser, and I think it was in the Conline van, you know, the only one in Korea. You know, Mike stands at the back of it, you know, he does his little magic trick when he pulls a little bit to the right side, and all of a sudden, and he clears the entire Econoline van. And the Air Force guys are like, they're going nuts, and we're drinking beer for the rest of the weekend.
Is it over? Is he doing it over the shoulder?
He does that too. This was a forward shot. Now, the one he did over shoulder was at a hail and farewell from 542. So I think it was when I was leaving 542. Or it was at a hail and farewell. And we're at somebody's house. I think we're at Ragu's house up in New Bern.
Okay.
And also, I'm talking to somebody, and then I see one of the wives. And then I see two of the wives. And then I see a couple guys. And I'm going, what the hell is going on? And I walk outside, and there's a swing set in the back with the bar. And the bar's like 8 feet off the ground. Right. And there's Mike with his back to the, you know, to all of us. And he's doing an over-the-shoulder boulder holder. He's pissing over the bar over his shoulder.
No.
And all the wives are going. And then they start cheering. So he would do that. He'd throw up in his hand and eat it.
No.
Yeah, and sometimes when he'd pee like that, he'd shit his pants. And the other thing was he'd take his – and he'd go – he'd sit there, he'd be talking to him. He goes, hey, I guess – I go, yeah. He goes, hey, I shit my pants. I'm like, don't tell me that.
TMI, baby.
go clean thyself, or God will not like you. So anyway.
Oh, my God.
So, but yeah, he would just do – he was – and he was the dog tags in and out the nose and the mouth.
Right.
Yep. So Mike was like
the nasal floss. Yep.
Yeah, it was a circus show.
Yeah, he was a total circus animal, but he was awesome to have at the squadron. He really was.
Yeah.
You know what? He got a, like, we had Sal and.
Were you there when he hit himself in Longapo?
Oh, they painted my fingernails in Longapo. That's the other thing those.
Yeah.
Fuckers did. Do you guys ever knew the wildebeest? She was famous in Westpac. They got her nail polish. And Earl Anderson crashed and died. He had a hypoxia and he crashed going through the speed of sound into the water. Brad DeVries was with him and he saw the whole thing.
He
lost a guy over there. And so that night we're having a wake, and the next morning I wake up and I go to my bathroom, you know, pasty mouth, cardigan sweater on my tongue. And I got a little, I'm washing my hands and there's a little red dot right here. And I'm going,
what is that?
Yeah, and I go like this, And I got bright red fingernail polish on my fingernails. And I went, and they're both done. Those bastards, when I was passed out, painted my fingernails.
Both hands.
Fucking killed.
Both hands.
Yeah, so I found, you know, so we had this little kitchenette between the rooms. So I'm in there digging for stuff. I find a pizza slicer. So for the next hour, I'm like, and then they show up at my room. I think I'm about halfway done. They show up at my room. Like, knock, 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 knock. And I look at my people, and there's Pisser, Turbo, Rosie, and a couple of the other JOs. And over the door, I'm like, fuck you guys. Bam. And they're like, I'm telling you, man. By the time we kind of had this transition in 542, it was by far the best squadron on the street. I mean, we had the best people. We had the most fun. It's just a great
guy. Yeah.
Oh my God, it was unreal. But yeah, we went to Westpac. I mean, we went to the Gulf War. Man, we got raw gear that fast on all the airplanes. We were manned up, full TO, everything. And then, you know, as we were kind of in this waiting period, we started sending guys back home. So we got to below TO, but we picked up a couple other cats and dogs like Calvin Klein, Dennis Haas. We picked up a few other people that flew with us during the conflict itself. But yeah. Great squadron, man. It was so
awesome. That's awesome.
And then there was Vapor with his rope and his musk gland musking the girls.
He was famous. Wait, whoa.
This is new.
We don't know anything
Vapor
about this.
Vapor neglected to mention this to
Vapor
us.
Vapor didn't say anything about a rope.
No, he would. Vapor rubbed all the skin off of his toes in the Philippines. I walked in our room because we had this room. We had two bunk beds in this room. So it was a staff, you know, because they were rebuilding all this stuff in staff NCO quarters in the Philippines. And literally what we did, because, I mean, you could get a case of beer, I think it was $1.25. I'm not kidding you. So we went in. It was me, Pisser, Rosie, I think, and Vapor was the guys in my room. And that's a bad combo. There's no adults in there. So we went to the package store and we looked at the prices. We said, how much for the pallet? So we bought a pallet of beer, brought it back on a pallet jack to our room. Carried in, broke it all down, carried it in, stacked it. We had a pallet in the middle of our room with beer. So I walked in one day and looked around the pallet, and Vapor's on the top bunk. I think he had three little Filipino girls up there with him.
No.
And he's just going, I mean, Vapor was in heaven.
No wonder he neglected Vapor, to tell us.
Oh,
you knew things were good for Vapor because you knew Vapor, you'd look over there in the corner, Vapor would have this look on his face. Like that. And he'd have his hand on a girl's back, and he's going like this. We called it his musk gland. And he's musking her. We're going, half an hour from now, she's going to be naked. it was a clown show, man. It was just hilarious.
What's with the rope?
Vapor's rope. Vapor, we made fun of his. He was very willing to show what he had. Especially as he got lit up. He would, you know, drop his pants. Like one time I was filming with my camcorder, and he had this weird look on his face. I'm like, what's he doing? And like, when he's just like shaking it, he's got his pants down, he's shaking his rope at me. And we just call it rope because it ain't long, but it sure is skinny. So anyway, we always refer to Vapor's rope, and we all still joke around about it. I mean, it's just, you know, it was, I'll tell you, man, it was a freaking.
No wonder he wasn't willing to.
No wonder he forgot to mention that.
Yeah. So, you know, Vapor's going to have to come back and refute all
and
this.
Defend
his honor.
Musk gland and his rope.
Yeah. Right.
He's a great guy. I mean, we had amazing people in that squadron.
I got to agree.
Oh, God. I just look back. That's what I said. I look back at my experience at that time in my life. And I just went, you know, how could I have been so fortunate and so blessed to have been there at that time? It was just, right. I mean, you know, all the bad times, all that stuff, you know, yeah, whatever, forget. But you got to look at, you know, when I look at the good parts, the blessings, the experiences, holy crap, you can't buy that kind of experience.
Oh, yeah.
No. At all. And then you get to fly a Harrier. I mean, come on, are you kidding me?
Right.
It's like, you know, Mr. Toad's Wild Ride. It was the best thing going. It's like, woohoo, yeah, this is awesome, man.
Yeah. So, all right. So now you got to regale us with Disco. How'd you get Disco?
Oh, so anyway, when I was in college, I did in high school, I got back into doing a theater production. And okay. I was as a kid. If you met, you guys won't believe this, but I was actually shy at one point in my life. I got over it. So I was really, and I was like, I am not getting on stage. I'm not doing this. But they were always having a hard time getting guys to do it. And I got talked in, and I'm like, fine, okay, I'll do it. And I did it. It was, you know, they say it's the roar of the crowd, the smell of the grease paint. So I actually had a pretty good time. So all through high school, I did it. Then I got to the university, and I decided one day, I'm like, you know what? I'm gonna audition for this play. So I auditioned for Dial In for Murder, and I got a part. So all through, I know, it sounds very gay, and there was a lot of theater faggots, and they're just so fun. So... Now you can wonder how I could do that. I was around a lot of, you know, not that there's anything wrong with that. It doesn't make you bad, just gives you bad breath. So I did theater all the way through college. Oh. And then as I was going there, they were like, you need to learn how to sing, you need to learn how to dance. So I'm like, okay. So I took some dance classes, and the lady that had a studio in San Luis Obispo I took one at the university, and then she says, hey, I want you to come be at my studio, and I'm going to put you on scholarship. And so I was like, okay. So I went there a couple of times. There were seven guys. There were four that were gay, three of us that were straight. And there were 300 women. And these were dancers. And they
enough
had...
Said, enough said. I like that already.
They had feet on one end and a biscuit on the other. It was perfect. This perfect set of legs and just gorgeous girls. And just, I went... I'm the smartest guy in the room. So I did that. And then what got me in trouble, and it kind of stopped after college and stuff, but what it got me in trouble was at the end of OCS, you know, when you, I don't know if you did it too, when at the end of OCS, you know, you get your commission, now you get a staff roast. So now the second lieutenants get to roast the staff.
Yeah, well, I didn't get to partake in any of that.
Yeah. So anyway,
DLCs didn't do that.
Yeah, I kind of did. I kind of did, you know, a little bit of a dance and acting number that just and it was funny. And I fried Gladstone and Staff Sergeant Smith. And so and the staff was in hysterics, with the exception of those two.
I wonder why.
Oh my god. So they, you know, they walk up to me, and I'm a second lieutenant now. They walk up to me after that and I'm like, think you're pretty funny, don't you? I go, yeah, actually I do. So that kind of followed me. And at TBS, when at the end we did our thing, and I put a little thing together with a bunch of guys, and it was really fun and funny. And so it kind of followed me. People knew that I had a little bit of a background, but I didn't really talk about it anymore. I just didn't say anything.
Yeah.
So I get to 203, and one of the guys in my class knew that I'd had that background, and he goes, you guys know that Begulin used to be a disco dancer? And then I went,
oh shit.
That's how it stuck. I just was like, okay.
Disco. Yep.
Yeah. Perfect. And then after a while I went, whatever, it's cool. But that's, Pisser got his call sign that way. I mean, everybody gets their call. Some guys pick theirs. Yep. I didn't pick mine. It just kind of slowly followed me and showed up, but it is what it is, man.
Same.
I just wear it.
I mean, it is what it is.
You can
you fight.
Kiss my lily white ass.
You know, the more you fight, the more it sticks.
So I know. William, my reaction the first time was like, "You're done. You're baked." So I gave Banjo his call sign because he was going.
He was going
by Shiloh or some freaking goofy thing like that.
Yeah.
And I walked into his, because we went through the rag together. So I walked into his room and he's sitting there. He's got his coveralls on. He's got one thing hanging down. He didn't have a shirt on. I'm looking at him. I'm going, no, man, your name's Banjo. Look at you. You look like an inbred from North Georgia.
Right.
And it's stuck.
Ding, 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 ding.
Oh, yeah, totally. Because he plays a band. He's a really good musician. And then, you know, when we went through the rag all the time, I mean, God, Bob's a good guy. He's a great guy. He's really a good dude. You can get him to talk fast enough on the radio.
Right.
Yeah, I think we're going to ease on over to there. And when we get there, we might do something.
Yeah.
But I'm already there because we're one in 50 nights.
Right.
Yeah. Good dude.
We've been talking a long time. I don't want to stop, but I got a couple questions to ask you.
All right, man. Bing, 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 bing. That's the guy.
Oh, my gosh. There's Banjo right there.
That's Bob Paravan right there. That's him.
So, you know, you got a lot of fun. You got a lot of flying time. You got a lot of flying time in the Harrier, and you got combat time in the Harrier, in the first Gulf War, the big one, the one that we won. did you ever have your hand on the ejection seat handle ever? Did you ever think this is it? Did you ever scare the shit out of yourself?
Well, hang on. Let me ask before. Was this the one you were going to cover in the extra?
Yeah, let me tell you another one. It's another pistol story. I'll save that one.
So we're going to do the extra for the Patreon and the financial donators, and that's what we'll bring to that, the ejection.
Yeah. So, yeah. Beast.
I love that thing, man.
Yeah.
Man, I get wet looking at it. It was so much fun.
Look at that.
So let me tell you one
picture
more.
Of a Harrier for those listening.
Story. Mike and I are flying to Osan Air Force Base from Japan. Okay. We're on our way across, going through Whiting West and all that kind of nonsense. And Mike just got a brand new camera. Pistol. He gets a brand new camera. He's like, hey, Disco, you're this. I'm like, okay. So he asked me what he wants me to do. And we have drop tanks on, so we're heavy and we're high altitude. You know, and the AV-8 is, when it's heavy and you're high altitude, it does not, it's a safe if you don't do things just right.
Yep.
So anyway, we're flying along and he goes, hey, I want you to do this for me. And I'm like, okay, I'll do anything. So he asked me to go, you know, go up over the top, inverted like this, and stop, and he's going to take a picture of me. And I'm like, okay, cool. So I go, yeah, I can do that. You can see where this is going.
I know where this is going.
You can see where this is going.
Yeah.
So I do that, and so same energy state. I mean, this is just basic physics. Same energy state. Bleed energy, bleed energy, bleed energy, bleed energy, bleed energy, bleed energy, no energy, and I get right.
And now you're inverted over him.
And now I'm inverted, but I'm not quite. I'm just like a little angle like this. And the AV-8, you know, it's bad enough flying right side up because it's heavily wing loaded. It's upside down. The wing just goes, I don't think so today. So all of a sudden, the airplane.
Yeah, if you had another guess.
It just starts doing, it's a gun safe with a lot of guns in it. And it's just going, yeah. Coming straight down. And I'm in my cockpit, and I'm looking, and the picture's phenomenal.
Oh yeah, he's got both hands on the camera. By the way, right?
Yeah,
he's got both hands on the camera. He's looking straight.
Yeah, he just goes, "Wow, great picture." You know, after the whole thing was over, and I'm like, "Yeah, I don't care if it's a good picture or not." So I'm in here, and I'm wiping the cockpit out, and I'm getting nothing. And I'm just, you know, stop the stop, and I'm screaming bloody murder, and my face is like this because I'm looking at him. I'm like, "Ah!" You know, like a little kid.
Yeah.
And I get down where I'm coming right at him, and my plane's a little bit, you know, a little bit in front of his. I'm going, I'm thinking this is that, you know, time compression thing. You know, it seems like it's four minutes, but it's 10 seconds. And all this stuff's going through my head. Oh my God, oh my God, I'm going to kill him. Okay, wait, there's going to be two jets at the bottom of the ocean here. I'm going to survive. He's not going to survive. I'm going to kill one of my friends. All this stuff's going through my head.
Yeah.
And I'm not kidding you. It's a God thing. Somebody just goes, push. And I pushed full rudder pedal. I don't remember which side it was. I think it was probably this side. So it was probably right rudder. And my airplane literally rudder rolled around his airplane. And I was so close to him, it knocked his airplane off altitude hold.
The wake of your airplane go by knocked it off altitude.
I literally went like this in the cockpit, full rudder. I went like, and I kind of did one of these, and I just hunched up like that.
Yeah, like you're bracing for impact, right?
Yeah, I mean, I thought
you can't eject because you'll eject into him.
Yeah, can't do anything. Yeah. So anyway, my airplane just goes. I don't know what happened. I just remember I just was like, and all of a sudden I'm like, and I go like this, and I kind of do this. So I grab the stick and I look up, and I'm just kind of back here. I'm below him now, maybe 500, 600 feet. I'm just like, and you're doing one of those. Yes. And I don't know how long it was, but finally, Pistol goes, Disco. Hey, Disco. That's how Pistol talks. Hey, Disco. I go, what? And he goes, I know that. I haven't said anything. And I go, dude, you have no idea how close you just got to dying. He goes, yeah, you know what? The airplane knocked me off. Got a great picture. I'm just going, shut up.
Tell me you have that picture today. Tell me
Mike probably does, but I was just like, oh my God, I almost killed him. Such an idiot. Why did I do that? What the hell was I thinking? Oh, what a stupid ass.
It was
a
bad idea at the time.
Oh, man. Anyway,
we've got several show titles out of this. It was a gun safe with a lot of guns. It's a good one.
grateful. Yeah, wanted to kill him. Didn't want to kill him. Wanted to kill him. Didn't want him to piss on my back. He pissed on my back, pissed over the bar, didn't get peed on there. Dog was funny. Funny dude. Anyway, yeah, so I'll tell you guys the Norway story. That's the one where I had the ejection handle in my hand.
Okay.
Yeah, baby. And I was brand new in the squadron. Brand new.
Yeah. Okay. So that's in the extra.
Yes, sir.
Okay. All right. Well, you know what? We've been going, just shy of 2 hours.
We've been going a long time.
Yeah, baby. So it's probably time we land this. But, oh, my God, has this been fun. You have got to come back because I can tell you're about 10% of the way through your stories.
Come on, dude. I know. Yes. Will you come back? Because, you know, like Lawman had 5 shows for fuck's sake. You
he's a funny guy. Too.
Yeah. He is a funny guy. Lawman is a funny Lawman could do 5 more shows.
Yeah.
You know his badge number. I know his badge number. 2676. I used to have his old bicycle. Yeah, from Japan. I bought his bicycle from him in Japan.
You had his Benjo Bomber? Oh, that's what the lock number was. He made his lock that number, right?
2676, that was his old Arizona State Trooper badge number.
And there that's what go. He made the combo lock for the bike, right?
There you go. I think it was,
Beautiful. Well, since you're a 542 Marine, before we start landing the airplane, I got to show you this too. So, Brad Silcott from BDS Aviation Photography takes amazing pictures. But one of the pictures he took was of a 542 jet, and I have up on the live stream video right now a Japanese kanji.
Yeah.
And so I asked my nephew, who happens to read and write and speak Japanese, I go, what is this? He goes, it means tiger, but it can also mean drunkard in a rare context. People would read it as tiger unless it was clear it was being used as otherwise. Definitely not the same interconnectedness as ass in English. So he was trying to compare it to donkey and ass. It could mean ass, jackass, or donkey. This means tiger or
it's quite
drunkard.
Quite appropriate.
And that's on the side of the 542 jets.
The history of the squadron, I guess, a night fighter attack squadron in the Second World War, like 1943-ish. Yeah, great history to the unit. Yeah, very much so.
They're second only to VMA 223 as being probably the best, you know.
Such a gay squadron.
I know. What?
The best squadron with the
Bulldogs,
with the best logo.
Yeah, it is a cool logo.
Yeah,
it was a cool
drawn logo. By Walt Disney himself.
Yep, that was a very cool logo. Yeah.
So, are we going to wrap this up and then come back and do extras?
We're going to do an extra for those who go to Patreon. So there I was .us/Patreon or so there I was .us/donate and spend their hard earned money on us. We're going to have some exclusive extra content for you. At those websites.
This is the Do You Have a Sister story? Just kidding.
Yes.
you know, I've had a hell of a core workout already, and I know it's going to get even better. Now, listen, like we tell all of our guests, especially ones that have great stories, when we're done, 30 minutes from now, you're going to think of 10 more stories. You just write down the bullets of them?
Yes.
So, I will. Because I know you're an old bastard and you'll forget that shit.
Yeah, son of a bitch, kids. Back when I had teeth.
Yeah.
Those pesky kids.
Exactly.
Oh, Lordy. So.
Well, hey, on behalf of a grateful nation, thank you for your service, Marine. We appreciate your service.
Hey, man, it was fun to serve with you guys. It was awesome. It was a blessing to get to do it. No doubt about it. It was a lot of fun. Great time. Great time.
And this is
everybody should be so lucky. Everybody should be so lucky.
I mean, we have lived blessed lives.
Oh, yeah. And, pay that price. I mean,
you're right.
You do pay a price, but everybody should be so lucky you get to have those experiences, man. You can't, you couldn't pay for them, and two, you'd never be stupid enough to put a check on the table. I ain't doing that shit. Yeah,
right. Ain't that the truth?
Chase says 542 is retired. The Japanese Tiger no longer flies it on the F-35.
It was on the panel on our. We had a Mongoose had a you know Mongoose pictured himself and imagined himself as a great scholar warrior. So he put on his airplane when we were over in Saudi Arabia. He put Bobby Aka, which was the name of El Cid's horse. And of course, all of us were like going, Bob Uecker, Bob Uecker, isn't that the name of El Cid's horse's ass? And he would just he would just, you know, of course he'd correct us and yell and scream at us and tell us what a bunch of Philistines and all that crap we were, but we're just, we kept, and it was like, it's like pulling a string. He always took the bait, man.
Push the button, get the response. You know, we know what we're doing here. Push the button.
Warning, warning, warning. Fire, fire. never fail. All right, fellas.
All right. Well, let's land this plane. So thank you for your service.
Oh, yeah, absolutely, guys. It was a blessing.
Fantastic. And thank you to all who have served and are currently serving, and to their families who sacrificed time away from mom, dad, brother, sister at birthdays and anniversaries and funerals. It's a big sacrifice, and your sacrifice helps our service members do their job, and we're grateful to you as well.
Big thank you to Dave Hamilton, Backbeat Media.
Yep. Backbeatmedia.com handles our advertising. So if you have a show and you want advertising, reach out to them. See if they can't help you out.
Now, Disco, I don't know if you're aware of this or not, but we have a merch store.
Oh, you do?
So there I was, .us/merch. We have a bikini, T-shirts.
Yeah. You got to get your bride in one. You don't get to wear one.
You guys have a thong for going to the beach?
You pay your... You play your cards right, you might get something.
I could take my banana, my new, so there I was, banana hammock down to Punta Cana here in the next month.
Yep. He's going to do it.
I just got a visual on that. You can pull that off, bro. You can pull that off. You still got a body for that.
It's pretty nauseating, but hey, what the hell?
Your wife will kill us.
Oh, God.
We have a glossary. We try to keep up with...
Does anybody with that?
Listen, we've thrown out a lot of acronyms like we always do. We try to keep up with them. We have a glossary. In case you don't know what an acronym means, it's in our glossary. And if we don't have it in the glossary, send us an email. Send it to sticks@sotheriwas.us.
That's if you want a real answer.
If you want a real answer, because Sticks is on that shit like white on rice.
Or you could write to us, I suppose.
You could, Bob. Yeah. I'm just going to be straight up with you. I'll give you a half-assed
answer.
We'll
forward it to Sticks.
we're going to forward it to Sticks. Sticks is spot on. And by the way, Brad Badass Silcott at BDS Aviation. There's his, look at that. That's a good look.
Oh, great. I've seen his pictures. Does good work.
Yeah, dude. I mean, he's got amazing pictures. Yeah. Thank you, Brad.
Indeed. BDSAviationPhotography.com.
Thank you, badass.
Yeah.
That's his call sign, badass.
Yep.
It's a long story.
And then, of course, we've mentioned him a couple times here, but Sticks and Bago, they're doing all the production work behind the scenes, which allows us to actually concentrate on having a conversation instead of having to type and do other stuff. So
those guys are awesome.
It's been fantastic. Yeah. So the sound in this one may be a little rough. We've had some coming and going from Fig, and he's on his tethered to his phone. I've been banging on my keyboard occasionally, and so apologies up front for that. I guess apologies here at the end. You just listened to all that crap, and if you didn't like it, too bad. Give us a 5-star rating anyway at sotheriwas.us/rate. Make it so. So, yeah. Hey, what do you think there, Fig? A couple more people we should thank?
Well, we probably ought to thank the two Air Force F-16 pilots that make the Air Force sound good.
Those guys.
Those gringos for letting us use their music.
Nice.
They have great music.
It is the best on the planet.
I like that gif on the right. That's good. I like that stuff. That's good.
Yeah.
Right.
That was one of his students. I thought it was one of the Dos Gringos. He said, no, it was one of the students in the rag. We made him dress up like a clown. It's on their album cover, album number 2.
I need 2 volunteers. You and you. Come with me.
Yeah. There you go. All right, boys. Until next week, stay safe and check 6.
There I was, crossing the pond, and you could see that I wasn't exactly fond of all the shit I was wearing on that day. Now an F-16 is cramped enough, but it's even worse with all that stuff supposed to save your life. But we knew there was no way. when you're going down the North Atlantic, man, it's over.
What?
He said it's over. That's for you, Disco.
That's it, baby.
That was awesome.
Man.
That was awesome.
It was fun, fellas. It was a good time.